In other news, a teen held for terror stabbing, possibly, of boys in aged 12 and 13 in class. Detective Chief Superintendent Luke Williams is with the Metropolitan Police.
Due to the surrounding circumstances, the investigation is now being led by officers from Counter-Terrorism Policing London, who are working closely with our local officers in response to this incident.
A real-life Rocky Horror Show, as at least nine people are killed in the Canadian Rocky Mountains. Premier of British Columbia, David Eby.
This is the kind of thing that feels like it happens in other places and not close to home, in a way that that this feels for so many British Columbians and Canadians.
Plus, into the classrooms, a 10-year plan to revitalise our schools and colleges. Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, at least nine people have been killed in what officials are calling one of the worst mass shootings in Canada's history. Seven victims were shot at a secondary school in Tumbler Ridge overnight. Two more people were found in a home nearby. Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney has described the shooting as horrific and cancelled a trip to the Munich Security Conference. Premier of British Columbia David Eby has updated reporters.
Eight of the people who died as a result of the shootings were at the school, including an individual we understand is the suspected shooter, who is believed to have died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. There are about 25 people who have been triaged by health authorities with various physical injuries, some profoundly serious and some more minor injuries.
Counter-terror police are leading an investigation into a stabbing at a school in northwest London. Two boys, aged 12 and 13, were injured in yesterday's attack at Kingsbury High School in Brent. A 13-year-old boy is being questioned on suspicion of attempted murder. Detective Chief Superintendent Luke Williams says the two victims remain in hospital.
We await an update on how they are, though we understand their conditions to be serious. The thoughts of everyone at the Met are with them and their loved ones, and we want to thank the doctors and nurses for providing the boys with urgent care.
A report says 3,700 anti-Semitic incidents were recorded in the UK last year. It's the second highest annual total after 2023, the year of the October 7th attack on Israel by Hamas. The figures were compiled by the Community Security Trust, which monitors reports of anti-Semitism. The Home Secretary says record funding is being provided for security at synagogues, Jewish schools and community centres. Sir Keir Starmer will look to reassert his authority when he faces MPs at Prime Minister's questions later. Sir Keir has been under intense pressure to quit in the wake of the Lord Mandelson scandal. The Prime Minister insisted yesterday, though, that he'll never walk away from his mandate to change the country. And the number of British troops in Norway is to double to 2,000 as part of efforts to bolster defences in the Arctic region against the threat posed by Russia. The Defence Secretary, John Healey, is expected to make the announcement later. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,353 after closing up 32 yesterday. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather, largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain. The best of any sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Where's the app? Oh, here it is. Ha.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next time.
Mom!
It's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven on Wednesday, February the 11th. Working out a battle plan, the Prime Minister proudly boasts he has the most working class cabinet of all time, which of course may be an attribute, but isn't it more important where people are going to rather than where they came? We'll look at that in more detail. In other news, fury for the sentencing of a teen for stabbing 12-year-old Leo Ross to death, aged just 12. Mr. Justice Chowdhury, who's a KC, handed out this sentence to the killer at Birmingham Crown Court yesterday.
It appears to me that you still lack even the most basic insight into your actions. You might say you're sorry, but it does not appear to me that you really understand what that means.
Is a 13-year term really enough, particularly, and we will tell you, of the violent past of this troubled individual? In other news, yet another rise in anti-Semitism. Policy director at the CST, Community Security Trust, Dave Rich, says the recent instances of anti-Semitism have included remarks or references to Israel.
Most of the anti-Semitic incidents that we record make some kind of reference to what's happening in the Middle East. People in the community want to see much stronger action against this kind of hatred.
Later in this hour, to Canada, as you've already heard on the LBC News Bulletin, 9 killed, believed 25 injured in the shooting at that school. We'll have more details. Talking about incidents at schools back here in the UK, a boy arrested for what's believed to be attempted murder after 2 pupils were stabbed at a school here. Terror in the classroom. And in other news, asking a woman if she is menopausal is not harassment, employment judges have ruled. Grace Malloy is a registered nurse specialising in the menopause. She says employers need to support their staff.
Really what they should be doing is asking, how are you impacted by menopause? You know, what are your symptoms? How's it affecting you at work? And then how can we help?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
An embattled and beleaguered Prime Minister seems to have worked out a new tactic, and that is to boast the working-class credentials of his cabinet. Those of you with good memories might remember he struggled to define working class with me a few years ago, but let's pick up on that. And what newspapers are saying is still the challenge from Wes Streeting. LBC's reporter Henry Riley. There's also, of course, Andy Burnham is in the mix as well. Henry attended Andy Burnham's conference in London yesterday. Henry, good morning. What did you learn?
Good morning, Nick. Yes, yesterday, Keir Starmer's last throw of the dice after a turbulent few days. Of course, badly wounded Prime Minister coming out fighting. But once again, yesterday, like seemingly virtually every day in Westminster right now, it was not plain sailing for Sir Keir Starmer. In no small part, as you mentioned, because of that resolution campaign event, which saw the King of the North venture down south to call for stability.
And I make my own call for that today across the Labour Party. Of course, stability comes from greater unity, and that would be helped by a more inclusive way of running the party.
And that speech from Andy Burnham, full of rhetorical flushes, but crucially laced with thinly veiled swipes at the current government. It was about as subtle, Nick, as Alan Carr on The Traitors, serving as a reminder to Labour MPs what they're missing out on after he missed out on selection for that crucial by-election. And he went on to virtually outline a manifesto.
Root and branch reform in Westminster and Whitehall, and a new political culture and a new political system. I would say our national political system is too short-term, too focused on point scoring, and concentrates power in too few hands.
Andy Burnham called for the government to be radical, abolish the House of Lords, reform the whole voting system, get rid of the whip system in Parliament, and build 500,000 social and council homes by the end of the decade. As you reference, Wes Streeting on the front page of The Guardian, The Financial Times today, the suggestion that Sir Keir is too weak to sack him. But yesterday, Downing Street had their fingers in their ears. They were not going to let Mr. Burnham or Mr. Streeting distract them from a planned rallying call from the Prime Minister. He broke cover speaking at a community centre in Hertfordshire.
There are some people in recent days who say the Labour government should have a different fight, a fight with itself, instead of a fight for the millions of people who need us to fight for them. And I say to them, I will never walk away from the mandate I was given to change this country.
And it was back to basics for Sir Keir Starmer, his political fight back honing in on a common theme that we've heard throughout his tenureship as leader of the Labour Party, that of class, as you mentioned, pitching himself and his government as unique in that way.
I've got the most working class cabinet in the history of this country, sitting around my cabinet table, and I'm really proud of that. Really proud of what they bring to the table. Their personal journeys to get there. Their experiences. But it is utter nonsense to suggest that that means everybody gets a fair chance in life. Utter nonsense.
And as we know, this is something Sir Keir has spoken about in the past. He was challenged by you to define the term back in October of 2023.
Define working class.
No, working class is families that you know, work for their living, earn their money through going out to work every day, not through
other
means.
Do not middle classes do that?
Well, working class families have the ordinary hope to get on in life. I mean, this has been
don't
a story.
Middle classes have that
yeah, of
as
course
well?
They do. Of course they do.
So what's but the distinction?
People will say to me, well, look here, you know, you've come a long way.
Yeah. You went to state school.
Yeah, but that is the ordinary hope of the working class, which is to have a decent education, to get a decent secure job, to get a car, to get a, you know, have a nice holiday, to have
Isn't that the middle class too, Sir Keir? Everything you just listed? No?
It is. Yeah, it is.
To get a car and to have a nice holiday. That was 2.5 years ago. We're still talking working class. Henry Reilly, before I let you leave the studio, there's one other headline I need to run by you in the political maelstrom that is number 10 at the moment. I'll read it from the top, from the front page of the Eye. Starmer's ex number 10 spin doctor loses Labour whip. What's this all about?
When it rains, it pours. This is Lord Doyle, who's been by Sir Keir's side since 2021. He was director of communications in Downing Street, left last year. He's now been suspended, had the whip suspended from the House of Lords because of his past association with Sean Morton. Now, he is a former Labour councillor who admitted indecent images offences in 2017. Crucially, Lord Doyle campaigned for Mr. Morton after he was charged with possessing and distributing these indecent images of children. He has apologised, said that is a mistake, but that he had contact with him in a welfare check to check on the individual's welfare.
Henry Reilly reporting 11 minutes after 7. So it would appear, by all measures, the Labour Party, the Labour government, decided to move towards the left, towards the working class. But is the move to the left the right policy? Let's put some of this to Conservative MP and Shadow Transport Secretary Richard Holden, who joins me now. Well, how do you respond to the fact, then, that it is a working-class cabinet that could drive the nation to some degree of growth and prosperity? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I mean, the idea that Keir's falling back on this sort of class warfare seems absolutely nonsense. I think what people want to see is a cabinet out there delivering for the country. They're not really interested in their backgrounds. They're interested in what they're going to do for them. And what they're seeing on my high streets at the moment, I was out there in Basildon and Billericay at the weekend, is my cafes under real pressure with business rates going through the roof, already paying massively higher national insurance rates. And the government totally distracted with its own internal warfare. Right across the front pages today, looks like Wes Streeting's trying to mount a coup. Maybe he can, maybe he can't. The Financial Times quoting allies of Keir Starmer saying that he couldn't sack Wes Streeting even if he wanted to. I mean, it's an absolute farce of a situation. And the idea to try and fall back on those old Labour tropes of, you know, let's have a bit of a class war and try and rally round a beleaguered Prime Minister who's in office but not in power is absolutely ridiculous.
How do you read the political runes over the coming weeks and months, say, up to and including the local elections, Mr. Holden?
Well, it's pretty clear to me that there's a lot of Labour front benchers who are quite happy to let Keir Starmer twist in the wind at the moment and let him take the blame for what might happen in the by-election coming up, what might happen to Labour in the local elections as well, as they get their own houses in order. And my big worry is what happens to the country in that period. That's why Kemi Badenoch's gone forward, really been very clear. She said that what we've got to do is get a change at the top now, because it's quite clear the Prime Minister cannot act in the interest of the country, totally held hostage by his own cabinet, his own backbenchers, and we've got to see change as quickly as possible, because his judgment has been shown to be not just a bit dodgy, but completely wanting in his crucial appointment of our most senior diplomatic role, which is what this entire story comes back to, appointing the friend of a paedophile to our most important diplomatic position. And I saw the front page of the Telegraph today. They've now got, after some weasel words from the Prime Minister following PMQs last week, now the civil service apparently in May, before the appointment, gave Starmer all the documentation that he needed regarding concerns about Lord Mandelson and that friendship with Jeffrey Epstein.
The measure of what you and your senior colleagues and Kemi Badenoch is trying to achieve, it's not fair to look at this month's by-election, because that's not a conservative position, I would say, but it is fair to look at the local elections coming up in a couple of months' time. What does success look like there, Mr. Holden?
Look, it's going to be a tough set of local elections. elections were still coming off because of the delays and in some of the boundaries for the new mayoral combined authorities and things like that. We are still coming off some of those high local election numbers from 2021, even. So I'm not obsessing about the results this year.
But how do we measure you? How is the party to be measured if we don't use the local elections?
The answer on that, I'd say, is Kemi cutting through in those head-to-head battles? And we're starting to see the poll numbers really shift on that. When it's Kemi head-to-head against Ed David from the Lib Dems, or Zach Polanski from the Greens, or Nigel Farage, or Keir Starmer, actually Kemi's the one who consistently comes out ahead on all of those things. That is yet, and you are quite right, Nick, to point out that that has not been translated into poll numbers for the Conservatives yet. We have to keep showing that we're a solid team with a plan for the future under Kemi's consistent leadership. And we're starting to get there, but we are, you know, we have a mountain to climb. It's only 18 months, Nick, since we had our worst election defeat in history. It feels like a lifetime. You know, people then, Andrew Marr, saying, oh, Labour's going to be in power for 10 or 15 years. You know, all of these, all the hubris now coming back to haunt the Labour political class. And it really is striking to me that even in all of those circumstances, Kemi is now, when it goes leader head-to-head ratings, she's ahead of everybody across the board.
Conservative MP, Shadow Transport Secretary Richard Holden, thanks for joining us on the show. Is it important where you're coming from, the working class? Surely it's more important where you're going to. And does Sir Keir's pledge or promise or assertion actually stack up? We'll be speaking with a leading historian and political biographer after this. Also, the teen held for the possible, I stress possible, terror stabbing of a 12 and 2 boys in class. Terror in the classroom. Addressed by Detective Chief Superintendent Luke Williams from the Met.
We await an update on how they are, though we understand their conditions to be serious. The thoughts of everyone at the Met are with them and their loved ones, and we want to thank the doctors and nurses for providing the boys with urgent care.
And more on that after the 7:15 LBC News headlines, read by Dominic Ellis.
At least 9 people have been killed in what's being described as one of the worst mass shootings in Canada's history. Police are continuing to question a 13-year-old boy on suspicion of attempted murder after a stabbing at a school in northwest London. And Sir Keir Starmer will face MPs at Prime Minister's questions later after resisting calls to resign. LBC weather staying largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain, the best of any sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the Surrey stretch of the M25 clockwise, heading towards Junction 10 at the A3. There's been 2 separate accidents. One's nearer Junction 10 at the A3 and only one lane is open. And then also nearer Junction 11, there's been another accident and one lane is closed. Albert Bridge remains closed in both directions and that's because of emergency repair works. Now, these problems on the trains do continue because of a signal failure just outside Stansted Airport. Stansted Express and Greater Anglia services are delayed by about 20 minutes, but still no cross-country services running between Cambridge and the airport. And also on the trains, Thames Link services are delayed at St Pancras.
This is LBC.
At AJ Bell, we believe every customer deserves brilliant service, which is just one reason we're rated excellent on Trustpilot. And we all trust pilots, with their smooth, captainy voices that make you feel like you'd let them land anywhere they like. Sorry, where was I? Right, AJ Bell, rated excellent by sexy pilots. I mean Trustpilot. I'm a flight risk. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house. Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off,
said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you. The new Smart Hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's Best Family Electric SUV of the Year. And did we mention that the Smart Hashtag 1 and Hashtag 3 are also previous What Car Award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with mum again.
May all orcas stay with the mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost, so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7, this assertion that is the most working class cabinet in history, A, does it stack up? B, does it actually matter? And how would you define working class? I'm reminded of one of the contributors earlier, was it earlier this month or last month, I can't remember, when I was, Sipsy said, it's when you've got a job and not a career. That defines, it's very difficult to actually lay that down. Well, I'll be speaking more about that in a moment. Let's just quickly take you through some of the headlines. Now, for many of you, there will be relief because politics has been shifted off some of the front pages, but sadly, by a very concerning story that we will cover in more detail later in this hour, the Daily Mail, teen held for, and this is quotes, terror stabbing, i.e. they don't know it, but it is a possibility, terror stabbing of boys aged 12 and 13. And the Daily Telegraph, pretty much the same line, terror probe into school stabbing. The Daily Mirror goes with a very powerful story. Again, we're going to do in this first hour. This is the father of 12-year-old Leo Ross, who's the 12-year-old boy who was fatally stabbed, saying his son's teenage killer should never be freed. The killer, who cannot be identified for legal reasons, now 14 years when he committed the crime, laughed during sentencing as his very violent past was revealed in court, including pushing an 82-year-old woman into a river or canal and hoping that she would drown. 13 years seems extraordinary sentence. We'll give you more details on that. But we can't get away from politics. Just lastly, it is still being played out on some of the front pages, as I think I mentioned. There's the Guardian. Streeting still intent on deposing PM despite United Front, say, allies. Back to British politics in just a moment, but it is worth looking at the front pages of newspapers in Canada in the light of this appalling shooting at a school there. In total, 10 dead, including the shooter. The Canadian Globe and Mail has that, at least 10 dead in mass shooting. The Toronto Star quotes the Prime Minister, quotes, "Our hearts are in Tumbler Ridge tonight. Canada mourns after mass shooting." Tumbler Ridge, of course. Tumbler Ridge, the location of that. And we will have a report from Canada also in the first hour. But let's come back to the story that has been, well, dominating the news agenda for some time. Does it matter what class you are? How would you define working class? And what would a supposed working class cabinet bring to the dynamic of trying to get growth, trying to get this country moving? Well, let's turn to Sir Anthony Seld, a contemporary historian, leading political and best-selling biographer, author of The Cabinet Office, 1916 to 2016, The Birth of Modern Government. Sir Anthony joins me now. You've heard the claim, Sir Anthony, you've heard the assertion. Does it stack up in your view? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Look, I think what the country wants is good quality government, stability, economic strength, economic growth. I don't think it cares so much about whether the cabinet is all the most working class ever. The first Labour government just over 100 years ago was full of trade union people. I think it's I think they're missing the plot, really. I think working people want great governors who are stable, competent, good, reliable, and do well for the country.
This idea of a class war, I suppose in a way, Sir Anthony, it is playing to a fundamental core of Labour belief, is it?
Well, it is. But that's where Labour, I think, are wrong, Nick, because the Labour voters are mostly to be found in the centre. Of course it matters that Britain is a fair country. Of course it matters that everybody, regardless of birth, has a chance to rise up to cabinet, to rise up to any number of jobs. A better education system would actually help that focused on what people can do rather than often what they can't do and fails one third of young people. But, Nick, I think they're fundamentally missing the point in going tribal. Labour will do much better. I mean, the tribalism has damaged Labour so much. What people care about is good government. They care about growth. They care about energy. They care about not people talking about levelling up, but they talk about prosperity back on the streets of Preston and Macclesfield and Newcastle. They care about the city centres being open and life and prosperity returning. It is irrelevant, frankly, and not true historically to make those kind of claims about being the most working class cabinet ever. Really, what does that mean? And let's go back to the first Labour government in 1924 that had a lot of genuinely working class and trade union members in it 100 years ago.
So, Anthony, this is the first time we've spoken since the Mandelson affair effectively blew up. As an astute political watcher, where do you see it going next for Sir Keir?
Well, I think he's going to find it very hard, Nick. As you know, as we've talked about before, a prime minister in trouble is safe as long as there is not a viable alternative around which the tribes can unite. At the moment, the fact that there are four, five or six possible alternatives plays to Keir Starmer's strengths, because the last thing that the Labour Party is going to want, like the Conservatives, is a massive punch-up. But if that just narrows down to one person, at that point, if he doesn't improve, if he doesn't provide the kind of quality of government that we were led to expect, putting sleaze behind, putting competence in front, and he can do that. I mean, he just needs to learn a little bit of humility, learn a little bit about what successful prime ministers have done, and then he will start taking off. It's hard to be prime minister, but it's much harder if you don't learn what the best have done. And he made so many avoidable mistakes, like not preparing for government, like not knowing who to appoint. So, Nick, he'll be strong. He'll be okay. He'll survive in office, if not in power, until that rival comes along, unless we really see energy, initiative, leadership.
So, Anthony, I understand there's a book coming along about the former Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, Sunak at 10. Do come on and speak about that on the day of publication, because I want to get your take on that as we talk about Prime Ministers who find themselves a bit beleaguered. We'll talk then. So, Anthony, thank you. So, Anthony Seldon, leading best-selling political biographer and contemporary historian, 726. Peter's in Southampton. Peter, how important is the class, someone's class? Where does it take him or her in your view? Good morning.
I don't think it matters. I think it's just political positioning, trying to attract a particular demographic. I don't think it does. When you look at the people in the cabinet, I wonder how many of them are actually millionaires themselves. You look at the value of their London houses, their savings, the second houses in the country, the gold-plated pensions. They might want to claim this working-class background, but I don't think it's credible.
It's interesting. It doesn't have the feel of a working-class cabinet when you see them in action, does it? With some notable exception, Angela Rayner, who is no longer in cabinet, by the way. But Angela Rayner clearly was, and good luck to the woman, clearly was working-class. I don't know if you can say the same about folk like, I don't know, Ed Miliband and others such as him.
No, absolutely not. And I think some of the people in the past that have done, you know, good things as prime ministers on both political parties, have come from completely different backgrounds. Now, what matters are what you're achieving, what your ethics are.
Totally agree. Peter, well said, thank you. Guy in Cleethorpes. Guy, what do you take from this position that Prime Minister is asserting? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I was just making the point to your researcher that as Prime Minister, when he came into government, he would pick his best team.
Yep.
I mean, that's the whole principle. So if he's now saying that he hasn't got the right team underneath him, A, it's another deflection on him, and B, you shouldn't be tokenistic about this. It shouldn't be about your background. It should be about your talent and your talent pool. It's just, I don't know. It's just complete naivety that they think that the voting population is going to see this as a major move forward.
Guy, if you think about important people in your life, your doctor and your bank manager, if you ever get to meet him or her, does it bother you whether they're working class or whether they're middle? You just want a good doctor and a good bank and a good surgeon and a good bank manager, don't you?
Oh, one word. Trust.
That'll do it. Guy, look after yourself. Have a good day in Cleethorpes. 7:28. Let's go to other matters. And as I mentioned when we went through the front pages of the newspapers, a boy of 13 believed to have launched a stabbing rampage in a school yesterday, leaving two children in serious medical condition. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight was at the Metropolitan Police press conference and at the scene yesterday and reports now. Fraser, good morning.
Nick, good morning. As one of the parents from Kingsbury High told LBC last night, school should be the happiest, safest place for kids to learn. But yesterday lunchtime, these children learned a very different lesson of violence, horror and pain as two boys aged just 12 and 13 were stabbed inside the school in Brenton, northwest London, leading armed officers to race to the scene. And now counter-terror police investigating whether this might have been an attack driven by ideology. They have a 13-year-old boy in custody, and Detective Chief Superintendent Luke Williams from the Met gives an update yesterday evening.
The investigation has not currently been declared a terrorist incident, and the investigation team will now be working at pace to gather any evidence and to establish the full circumstances of what has happened as quickly as possible.
Now, Kingsbury High has around 2,000 pupils and is spread across two campuses right next to each other. This attack happened in the lower school, which teaches children in years 7, 8 and 9. And as I stood at the school gates last night, watching parents leaving with their children in tears, it really struck me just how young these children are. It's easy to forget. They're just 12 and 13 years old. There are lots of different accounts coming out about what happened inside the fire alarm apparently went off. Children were ushered into the playground without their jackets and bags. And there are now unconfirmed reports too that the attacker may have shouted Allahu Akbar, meaning God is great. This former pupil still has friends at Kingsbury and spoke to me at the scene.
They were shocked. They didn't feel as scared because they still had the security and the teachers, but they were shocked to see like some students getting stabbed up. Nobody else has ever seen this before. It's wrong, obviously. There is cameras, the CCTV all around the school to keep the children safe, so I believe justice will come soon.
Now, there was a huge manhunt for the suspect yesterday after the attacker fled the scene, but a boy aged 13 was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder, and the two school kids who were stabbed, we're told, are in a serious condition in hospital.
Fraser Knight reporting. Coming up later in the show, fury as a boy of 15, 14 at the time when he fatally stabbed a 12-year-old boy. He'd also been on a three-day rampage of violence, pushing an 80-year-old woman into a river. Gets just 13 years in jail. How can that be? Plus, I'll look into the world of finance. And then later in the show,
I feel it in my fingers. I feel it in my toes.
You don't just feel it in your fingers and your toes. There has been rain every single day so far this year. It's wet, wet, wet out there. But when will the rain stop? That's later. 7:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News. Dominic Ellis.
Nine people have died in a shooting at a school and a nearby home in Western Canada. The suspect is also dead and more than 25 people are injured. Police are continuing to question a 13-year-old boy on suspicion of attempted murder after a stabbing at a school in northwest London. Two boys, aged 12 and 13, were injured in yesterday's attack at Kingsbury High School in Brent. And Keir Starmer is preparing for Prime Minister's questions later. After fighting back against pressure to quit, he's promised he won't walk away from his mandate and has hit out at infighting within the Labour Party. LBC weather largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain today. The best of any sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Labour's leader in Scotland tells him to go, yet Keir Starmer comes out fighting.
I will never walk away from the mandate I was given to change this country.
The Cabinet falls in line behind the Prime Minister, but how long can he hang on?
We've got a country to run, and the last thing we need right now is all this speculation looking inwards.
I'll be joined exclusively by the Deputy Leader of the Labour Party, Lucy Powell, this afternoon from 4.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this Air France message. Looking to start your journey with a taste of France? Enjoy in-flight French elegance as Paris, the City of Light, greets you on your way to the world's most remarkable destinations. Starting March the 29th, Enjoy twice daily flights from London Gatwick, connecting via Paris to Asia, Africa, and North America.
Elegance is a journey. Air France.
To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
Cadbury Dairy Milk bars are made to share. But how do you decide who gets what? If you're the one who does the washing, keeps all the socks from getting separated, irons and folds it, then you deserve the biggest share. And if you have a floor drobe, well, you're lucky to get a few chunks, really. Cadbury made to share. Pick up a limited edition bar now.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, stop working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new, tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la, 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 I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Working out a path to reclaim the political higher ground. Sir Keir Starmer talking about his working class cabinet, but will it work with you? Rudy, you'll be the next caller. 7:35 is the time. Now, staying with political matters, if you were to think that Peter Mandelson's problems are all political or even financial, they seem now to be extending into the world of business. And here to explain, Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, and indeed the paper splashes or leads with that story today. What's the background, Christian? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. The background is that as a large part of the fallout of the Epstein files and the references, the many, many, many references to Peter Mandelson, also showed, and CCM's been digging into this, the extent to which Jeffrey Epstein was relied upon by Peter Mandelson when he was building and launching his city firm called Global Council. This is a firm which specializes in strategic advice and lobbying and communications advice, etc., to some pretty top-tier clients over the years. Now, it's been revealed through these emails that Peter Mandelson was leaning on Jeffrey Epstein back in 2010, 11, 12 to sort of introduce him to potential clients, and he was discussing the business plan, and it was quite close involvement. Now, Peter Mandelson himself said that the stench of Epstein never goes away. And I think that's what's happening here. Now, Peter Mandelson doesn't have anything to do with this company anymore because he had to leave it. He was the founder and the chair. But when he became US ambassador, he had to leave it, leaving a large investment in the company, which has since, amidst this scandal, been desperately trying to sell off that stake. They have completed that. Nevertheless, clients started to exit. They didn't like the association. CGM understands today that pensions giant Phoenix and indeed Tesco and Bank of America have all severed their ties. They don't want to be represented or advised by this company anymore. The chief executive, a chap called Benjamin Wegg Prosser, who was a long-standing associate and aide to Peter Mandelson over the years, resigned last week. So there's clearly a bit of panic at the company. Now, it should be said that there will be people at this company who never met Peter Mandelson, let alone Jeffrey Epstein. And you do understand that, you know, this could be curtains for a company that obviously employs people and people have built careers there. It's perfectly legitimate. But it is becoming harder and harder for them. And a lot of clients that we speak to say we don't want to be associated, even in this sort of twice or three times removed capacity. So there is pressure there at the company that was founded by Peter Mandelson.
Let's stay with your front page. And the second lead reminds me of that graphic video from well-heeled Richmond in southwest London with two men seeming to smash the front window in of a jeweller's. And you and your colleagues have done a little bit more work on the background of all of this.
Yes, watches, particularly high-end watches. I think I can see something quite chunky underneath your
stuff, Nick. Maybe a little bit. I do like a watch. I'm going to admit it. Yes, I do like a watch. Go on.
Well, the total value of luxury watches registered as lost or stolen on a global database that monitors this hit a record £1.7 billion last year. So £1.7 billion worth of high-end watches registered as lost or stolen. 10,000 more were logged onto the site in 2025. That's about one watch per hour throughout the year. So there are about 115,000 now logged on there. Why does the database exist? Well, it helps people who are buying a watch from reputable sources or indeed at a car boot sale, Nick, to check whether this is registered as lost or stolen. The numbers are going up. People are using this service to check more and more frequently. And perhaps no surprise that Rolex tops the list of watches registered as lost or stolen. So keep yours close to you at all times, Nick.
I will do. It's locked in a safe, I promise you. Lastly, as the Prime Minister talks about being working class and a working class background, who's warning him about worklessness?
Well, somebody who knows what they're talking about. We're talking about the boss of Tesco UK, Ashwin Prasad, who was speaking at an event in Westminster yesterday. Now, Tesco, keep in mind, is the largest private sector employer in this country. They employ over 300,000 people. And as you can imagine, Nick, a lot of them are entry level, people coming into work for the first time or returning to work after various periods out of the workforce. So they know what they're talking about. And he said that this country has been sleepwalking into a quiet epidemic, keeping millions of people out of work. And he says that his perspective from a leading employer in this country is that far fewer people are in work than there otherwise could be or indeed should be. And he says the consequences of this for individuals, for families, for streets, for villages, towns and the national economy cannot really be underestimated, Nick. We know that the increasing number of people out of work benefits, sickness benefits, and we know about 800,000 of them are actually graduates. So this is a national crisis. He is speaking up in his capacity as a major employer. And of course, he's echoing by the words by Sir Charlie Mayfield, the former John Lewis boss, who is undertaking a review of all of this for the government. So I think it's valid questions for the government about efforts to encourage people back to work. And by the way, he is obviously this Tesco UK boss talking about conditions made difficult by increases in employment taxes, something which they will feel very acutely.
Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, talk around the same time tomorrow. Thank you for that. 7:41. Rudy, coming to you for your view on this working class. It is the story that's got us talking. Mike in Crawley, know what you mean before ending up in a conceptual cul-de-sac. Has anyone used the term working class yet? I'm surprised not to have heard it, but perhaps it's just me. Jim, what's this fascination with politicians have with trying to come across as working class? They somehow think it connects them to the electorate, but actually it's utterly cringeworthy. And another Jim, this Jim in Lincoln, also makes the point that this seems to have heard this before. That's Jim in Lincoln, I'm sorry. Another Jim, Jim Nerger, says, I don't know how working class he claims his cabinet to be. This is about ineptitude in government, not how wonderfully flat cap his cabinet could be. Rudy in Bristol. What do you want to say, Rudy? Good morning.
Well, first of all, how does he know what working class is when you asked him previously on another show what working class was and he couldn't answer the question?
No, he still hasn't.
Yeah, exactly. The second thing is, it's really important to have working class because, like, for example, my mother, she worked 7 days a week in a mental hospital, my late mother, and she had to get bread on tick, you know, for us. You know, so I'm saying, Nick, right, you need people like that that really understand what people go through in order to be working class. You know, those people have not got a clue. They've not been through what other people have been through.
Is it in a sense, you've referenced your mother, is it in a sense then quite insulting for folks such as yourself, Rudy?
Yes, it is insulting. My mother worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, 8 o'clock in the evening till 8 o'clock in the morning, 7 days a week. You know, and she had to get flipping bread on tick.
That is real working class, not going through, albeit it was a state school, but a grammar school, I repeat, a grammar school in Surrey, which is, of course, the Prime Minister's famous father was a toolmaker. Rudy, thank you. We'll have more on that in a moment. 7:42 now, as you've heard on the LBC News Bulletin, horrific events in Canada. Believed at least 9 people shot and killed at a high school. Here's the Premier of the District, British Columbia, David Eby, giving this update overnight.
8 of the people who died as a result of the shootings were at the school, including an individual we understand is the suspected shooter who is believed to have died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. There are about 25 people who have been triaged by health authorities with various physical injuries, some profoundly serious and some more minor injuries.
Let's go to Srushti Gangdev, who's assistant news director at 1130 News Radio, joining us from Vancouver. What update can you give us, Srushti? Morning to you.
Good morning. I apologize firstly for my dog in the background here.
Don't worry.
Obviously, not a great reason to be joining your show. A really tragic thing that's happened here. We've learned that 10 people, including the suspect in this incident, have died in this. We know that at least one other person is in critical condition, was airlifted to hospital quite a long distance from that rural community of Tumbler Ridge, down here to Vancouver, about a two-hour flight. And details just coming in here, but it's not the kind of thing we ever expect to happen in our corner of the world.
What do we know about the so-called shooter, Srushti?
At this point, not a lot, to be frank. We know that a bulletin went out early Tuesday afternoon warning people to be on the lookout for what police described as a female with brown hair. We know that police have recovered the suspect's remains at the scene, and they said that the suspect's description matched up to the person that they found. They're not telling us the person's age. They're not telling us their gender. They're not telling us what kind of connection this person may have had to the high school in question or to the home where another two victims were found dead in the community.
Lastly, what can you tell us about Tumbler Ridge, about the area?
It's a very, very small community of about 2,700 people, maybe even less than that. We've been talking to people from the community. Like I say, it's very far from Vancouver. It's about a 13-hour drive from here. So quite far removed from the bigger communities in our country. It's the kind of place we're hearing where, you know, people know everyone. They leave their bikes unlocked in the streets, and you can come back the next morning and expect that it's still going to be there. This is also the only secondary school in the community. So I think one thing that I've really been thinking about as we go through all this is that every single person who has lived in that town their whole life went to that high school. Every single person in that town probably has some sort of connection to the people who have been affected by this horrendous tragedy.
Really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you. Srushti Gangdev, Assistant News Director at 1130 News Radio, joining us from Vancouver. Yes, you did hear correctly. Not releasing the gender of the shooter, as they're calling it. That's why it jumped out at me. What, normally you would say the gunman or possibly gunwoman. Someone described as a brown-haired person wearing a dress. So more to come out on that, I sense on that. Coming up after the news, fury over the sentencing of a 15-year-old, 14 at the time, who fatally stabbed a 12-year-old boy following a three-day rampage of violence, pushing an 8-year-old woman into a river. He gets 13 years. Seriously? We'll look at that. 7:46, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Nine people have died in a shooting at a school and a nearby home in Western Canada. Counter-terror police are leading an investigation into a stabbing at a school in northwest London, and a report says 3,700 anti-Semitic incidents were recorded in the UK last year. LBC weather. Largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain, the best of any sunshine in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 clockwise on the Surrey stretch. It's because of two separate accidents. One is at Junction 10 at the A3 and the other one is just before Junction 11 at Chertsey. There are severe delays. In fact, I'm looking at delays of around 10 miles now on the approach. Albert Bridge remains closed in both directions because of the emergency repair works. On the trains, all services are now running to and from Stansted Airport, but Stansted Express, Greater Anglia and Cross Country all delayed after that signal failure from earlier. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the District Line westbound between Tower Hill and Earls Court because a train's broken down.
This is LBC.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at Ocado.com.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest, you probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Selling your car can be super simple if you choose We Buy Any Car. Now in their 20th year, they're on average 11 minutes away, so help is never far. If only they could make finding a good driving song simpler. No. No. Oh, definitely not. We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To sell your car today, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper, to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili. Try Dolmio Intensify. Pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before eight to Birmingham Crown Court, where sentencing took place of a person, a child who was 14 at the time of the crime, 15 now, cannot be named for legal reasons, who fatally stabbed a 12-year-old boy who was just walking innocently through a park. Sentencing from Mr. Justice Chowdhury KC.
It's also suggested that you've expressed some remorse for your actions. However, it appears to me that you still lack even the most basic insight into your actions. You might say you're sorry, but it does not appear to me that you really understand what that means.
The mother of the victim, Leo Ross, is furious and has lashed out at what she calls the feeble sentencing. We need to tell you that the attacker dealt a single stab wound to his victim's stomach and then pretended to be a witness by helping to raise the alarm in the Hall Green area of Birmingham. It's now emerged that 2 days before the killing, the teenage attacker, again, he cannot be named, pushed an 82-year-old woman into a river and told her, "I tried to drown you, but now I'm going to kill you." He then beat her with her own walking stick. He then went on to attack two other lone women before fatally stabbing the 12-year-old boy. One of the victims, a 79-year-old woman, had been targeted just half an hour prior to the killing. 13 years? Let's turn to Wendy Joseph, KC, former Old Bailey judge, wrote Rough Justice, Do We Have the Law We Deserve? And Unlawful Killings. Judge Joseph, good morning. This, to me, seems a tad lenient, but you'll put me right, I'm sure. Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Well,
I
can entirely understand what you're saying. I can so understand what the victim's mother is saying. But the first thing to make clear is the sentence isn't 13 years. The sentence is life imprisonment, because that is the only sentence you can have for murder. Mm-hmm. And that means it goes by a different name for a child under the age of 18. It's called detention during His Majesty's pleasure. But mm-hmm. it means the same thing. It means there is no release date. So this boy may never get out. But how this judge got to the minimum tariff, well, I can explain what he may have been doing. I can't tell you exactly what he was doing.
No.
But his job is to say how many years must be served before a defendant can apply for parole. For a boy under the age of 18, you start with a figure of 12 years. For an adult, you would start with a figure of 15, but if a knife was being carried, you'd start with a figure of 25. So with the boy of 14, you start with a figure of 12, and then you must increase it for the carrying of the knife. It would probably, for that reason, go up to somewhere around 18 or 19 years. Then you look at other aggravating features, and this judge mentioned that this was a carefully planned attack, and rather horrifyingly, that there were sadistic elements, that he was getting pleasure from what he was doing. That would push the figure up again to around 20 or more years. Then you've got to start pulling it down for mitigating features. One feature this judge will have looked at is any mental health reports, anything suggesting this defendant was unwell in some way, that would pull it down. Then you pull it down for the plea of guilty. So that brings it down again. So, Nick, you might get to a figure as low as 13 or 14 years. Then you've got to take into account those three other victims. All of this has to be rolled up into the one sentence. So you've got three elderly victims, which ought to push the sentence up again.
But the reality is, Wendy, this individual could be out by the time he's 28 or 29 with such a violent background. Could, I stress could. That can't be right. That can't be safe.
Well, Nick, with the greatest respect...
I always love that.
The decision...
Don't talk such codswallop, Nick, is what she wants to
no,
say.
No, I'm not saying that. Nick, you know I would never say that. But the reality is the decision as to whether he's safe or not is not in the hands of the judge. It has, by law, to be in the hands of the parole board. And that's why there is no release date. So the parole board looks at him and they could say when he's 27, he's not safe. And they could still be saying it when he's 87.
Lastly, noting that you were probably still in university or chambers, many years ago there was the horrific case of James Bulger. And we were allowed to know the identity of his two killers.
Yeah.
Why can't we know the identity of this young man?
Well, this judge hasn't made the decision yet. He's going to make that decision today, I think. And I, personally, I would be quite surprised if we don't hear his name.
Oh, that's interesting.
But it does depend on things I don't know.
Okay.
I haven't seen the psychiatric reports and so forth. On the face of it, although you don't normally reveal the name of a defendant of that age, there are strong arguments in this case. There may be counter-arguments. We will hear.
All right. Court rise. Judge Joseph finishes. Thank you, Wendy. Wendy Joseph Casey, former Old Bailey judge and author. Thank you, as ever, for your time. I'm sure as and when a ruling does come down on the identity of this individual, you'll hear it here on LBC. But let's discuss it now. 4 minutes before nine. Sean's in Exeter. Sean, whichever you want to talk about, the sentencing or the anonymity. Good morning.
Both, really. Good morning to you. I think we have to look at the kind of punishment and rehabilitation. I agree with you and probably most of your listeners that it looks quite, you know, minimum 13 years. But you have to understand of his age, and we still have to, with the anonymity, we have to think of his, because he's still a child.
But it is the lower end of the tariff. As the judge worked through, we could have been looking at 18. We've ended up at 13. It doesn't feel right, Sean.
It doesn't feel right, and a lot of people's gut, it doesn't feel right. And we have to, I'm not going to mention any names, but we have to look at country as well, towards, you know, obviously around Liverpool, what happened there in that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a child, but again, it was being around the papers and things and saying, oh, they were calling him a man at some point, and he was still a child.
No,
so that's where, and I think that's wrong. And they did that on a certain TV news channel, I'm not going to mention it, but ends in news. And I think that was appalling, actually. Just going on to the punishment side, but I don't live in London, but I hear a lot of cases where people and a lot of children where they're getting mixed up in stabbings and things, and it's so difficult for the police to stop and search a lot of these, I guess, black boys. How do we deal with that? How do we go forward on that? Because it's a big issue. I don't
should
know.
He, lastly, Sean, should he be named? Should we know his identity?
Do you think a lot of serial killers should be named with children and ages? Yes, I do.
I'm glad you agree with me. Sean, thank you. Only finishing, because I want to get one call in. We've discussed a lot this morning. The other story, of course, is the events that took place in a school in London. Two pupils, horror in the classroom as they were stabbed in a possible terror attack. Malcolm in Manchester wants to take us back to that story. What's the line you want to do on that? Good morning to you.
Yeah, my observation on that, thank you for taking my call, is that in Canada, of course, the availability of guns like the USA is pretty freely available for most who want to access guns or buy guns. But in the UK, it's very restricted. You can't even get them in the country. They're not freely available at home, like in a drawer. You can open up a drawer and get a gun out or something. But and we must sort of be grateful that although it's very sad for the children stabbed in the North London North London school, that if that guy had had access to a gun, we would be looking at the same Canada scenario of many, many more deaths and injuries.
What a good observation, Malcolm. Thank you for that. The music means we have to move on, but we might return to that. Malcolm made a very relevant point and linked two stories together brilliantly. Coming up after the news, I'll take you back to your classroom as a revolution is on the way. What was your school classroom like? This warning over worklessness from the man who runs Tesco, Ashwin Prasad.
We have been sleepwalking into a quiet epidemic that is keeping millions of people out of work.
To Employment Tribunal, asking a woman if she is menopausal is not employment harassment, and
I feel it in my finger. I feel it in my toes.
You feel it in your fingers and your toes as it continues to get wet, wet, wet. It has rained every day so far this year. When will it end? That's later in the show. 8 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, nine people have died in a shooting at a school and a nearby home in Western Canada. Officials say more than 25 people were injured in the attack in Tumbler Ridge overnight. Shrushti Gangdev is a journalist in Vancouver. She told Nick details remain limited on the suspect.
We know that a bulletin went out early Tuesday afternoon warning people to be on the lookout for what police described as a female with brown hair. We know that police have recovered the suspect's remains at the scene, and they said that the suspect's description matched up to the person that they found. They're not telling us the person's age. They're not telling us their gender.
Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney has cancelled a trip to the Munich Security Conference following the shooting. A 13-year-old boy is being questioned on suspicion of attempted murder after a stabbing at a school in northwest London. Two boys aged 12 and 13 are in hospital. Counter-terror police are leading the investigation into yesterday's attack at Kingsbury High School in Brent, but it's not been declared a terrorist incident. A report says 3,700 anti-Semitic incidents were recorded in the UK last year. It's the second highest annual total after 2023, the year of the October 7th attack on Israel by Hamas. The data also shows a spike in reports following the Manchester synagogue attack last year. The government says it is providing record funding for security at synagogues, Jewish schools and community centres. Sir Keir Starmer is preparing for Prime Minister's questions later after fighting back against pressure to quit. He's promised he won't walk away from his mandate and has hit out at infighting within the Labour Party. Yesterday, he thanked his cabinet for their strong and united support. But the Shadow Transport Secretary, Richard Holden's, told Nick he thinks the Labour Party has lost confidence in the Prime Minister.
There's a lot of Labour front benchers who are quite happy to let Keir Starmer twist in the wind at the moment and let him take the blame for what might happen in the by-election coming up, what might happen to Labour in the local elections as well. That's why Kemi Badenoch's gone forward. She said that what we've got to do is get a change at the top now, because it's quite clear the Prime Minister cannot act in the interest of the country.
And the Prince of Wales is on the final day of his official visit to Saudi Arabia. The trip has at times been eclipsed by questions about his uncle Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Andrew has always denied any wrongdoing. In the city, the FTSE 100 has just reopened at 10,353. It closed up 32 yesterday. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain. The best of any sunny spells in the south. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after eight, Wednesday, February the 11th. I want to take you back to your classrooms. I appreciate some of you possibly are school pupils now or teachers, but if not like me, go back to your classrooms. What was it like? How welcoming was it? How conducive to learning was it actually inside that classroom? Well, a revolution is taking place, a 10-year plan to transform schools and colleges, and we'll give you more details on that in just a moment. Plus, the problems of anti-Semitism. Dave Rich is the policy director of the Community Security Trust, the CST, set up to safeguard Jewish people in this country.
An ordinary Jewish person just going about their daily lives and a random stranger shouts abuse or threats at them in the street. And it's happening much more often than used to be the case.
Yes, an uptick after those horrific events at the synagogue. The amount of anti-Semitism actually increased. We'll look at that later in this hour. Plus, as an Afghan asylum seeker is found guilty of abducting, raping and taking indecent photographs of a 12-year-old, the police have acted. Detective Chief Inspector Colette O'Keefe is from the Warwickshire Force.
It's most important for the victim, because at the heart of this is a 12-year-old girl that's been raped. So, you know, it's a very brave individual that's come forward.
Plus, to an employment tribunal, asking a woman if she's menopausal, or indeed making a sort of semi-gag about it, is not harassment. Surprising. What is the impact of the menopause on you, particularly in the workplace? Grace Malloy is a registered nurse specialising in that area.
Really what they should be doing is asking, how are you impacted by menopause? You know, what are your symptoms? How's it affecting you at work? And then how can we help?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
So what was your classroom like? Fortunately, in my case, it had fairly large windows, so I was able to look out at the playing fields quite a lot. But that doesn't really help with your learning. And the government is determined to try and do something about it. Labour MP and Minister for School Standards, Georgia Gould, who's smiling, possibly her classroom had big windows as well, joins me now. Minister, what's the plan that you and your colleagues are announcing today? Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Brilliant to be here. And we are announcing a 10-year plan to fix the huge problems in our school buildings. You know, under the last government, we had too many crumbling buildings, leaking roofs, and children, you know, not feeling like that they were getting the best buildings for their education. We want to fix that. We know we need long-term investment, and that's why our plan goes on for 10 years, backed by tens of billions of pounds. And, you know, two of the key things I wanted to really say something about this morning. First is a real focus on inclusion. I was on your show recently talking about how important it is that schools are accessible for children with special educational needs and disabilities. We're setting out new standards and expecting every secondary school to have an inclusion base, a safe space for children with special educational needs and disabilities. But the second thing I wanted to emphasise is, you know, we have seen too often sticking plaster solutions, sometimes literally sticking plaster solutions, and we want to see proper proactive investment. So you're fixing the roof before the roof falls down, and that has not been happening, and it will happen under our plans.
Minister, just for clarification, this is for all pupils or specifically for SEND pupils?
So the 10-year plan is for all pupils, all school buildings, but within the 10-year plan is a real focus on inclusion. So the things that we know make it easier for children with special educational needs and disabilities to learn, making sure there's accessible changing rooms, making sure that lighting isn't too bright and acoustics for children with sensory needs, and ensuring that there are these inclusion bases attached to mainstream schools that mean that, you know, children who can be in a mainstream school but need some more, you know, smaller space to learn are able to do that. And I know that I've seen how life-changing that is for children who can be educated in their community.
You said tens of billions of pounds, ultimately. Yeah. Not today, but tens of... I mean, how many tens of billions? What are we talking about ultimately, Minister?
Yeah, so we're talking about three sets of investments. So 20 billion is going into building new schools. We've announced 500, another 250 will be coming forward. Then every year we'll be putting, at the moment, just over 2 billion, but it will go up to 3 billion by 2034 into kind of maintenance of schools. And we're announcing a new fund, 700 million, which is for school renewal. It's the proactive maintenance of schools. And I was talking to you recently about the 3.7 billion we're putting into specialist places for children with special educational needs and disabilities. So there's a number of different pots, but you know, we are really determined to improve the school estate and show children that we care about their learning.
You mentioned a safe space. Describe what a safe space would look like, if you would, Minister.
So I'll give you some examples of ones that I've visited where you have children who have significant needs, who can't spend all their time at the moment in a mainstream classroom, who have a space that is very much designed for them. There's a smaller number of children, and they are getting kind of specific support and interventions within that space. But I think what's been really powerful about having these attached to mainstream schools is that over time, those children often can go in back into mainstream lessons. And I've talked to young people, and you know, I've heard from them that they say they think that they would have ended up dropping out of school if they didn't have that space to return to, and just have a little bit more quiet when things get overwhelming in a mainstream environment.
What do you remember about your classroom? It's not that many years ago.
it was many years ago. What do I remember about my classroom?
Was it conducive to learning?
Yeah, I went to two wonderful comprehensive schools, and I like had a great education. I you know, they were brilliant school buildings. I think both schools didn't have a huge amount of kind of outdoor space and sports space, but
were you educated in London?
I was educated in London.
Tough.
Yeah.
Okay. Just a couple of other matters while I've got you on, Minister. The Prime Minister is talking about how he has the most working class cabinet of all time. Mm-hmm. Can you help us define what is working class?
Well, I think working class is, you know, he's talking about the, you know, the occupation, the jobs of the parents of the people in the cabinet, often that they were the first ones in their family to go to university. They went to comprehensive schools. They grew up without a huge amount of money. That's the cabinet that we have. And it, you know, it's in stark contrast to previous cabinets where, you know, there were, you know, majority of the members went to private schools, large numbers to Eton. That, you know, we have a cabinet that represents the country.
Are you, I know you're not in the cabinet yet, are you working class?
No, I'm not working class.
What would you define yourself as? I remember your dad, obviously. So
yeah,
I know
so
a
my parents, they
does
were...
Does it matter what class you are, Minister?
Well, my parents both had, you know, professional jobs, and they you know, I wouldn't define myself as working class.
Look, but
I
does
think
it matter?
I think what really matters is you have a diversity of perspectives. I think it matters if the only voices around the table are those who come from, you know, very privileged backgrounds. I think it's really important that we have MPs, you know, who previously have been teaching assistants, social workers, doctors, business people, that we have that range of voices in politics. And I think that's what Keir Starmer was really highlighting, that shift and that difference, that these are a group of ministers and cabinet that reflect the country.
If we're talking about the cabinet, the Guardian newspaper is reporting today that Wes Streeting is set to challenge Sir Keir's leadership, possibly within weeks. What would your message be to your colleague, Mr. Streeting?
Well, I think Wes has come out and, you know, said very clearly that that is absolutely not true, and asked that people talk to him before they put out those kind of stories. I think that Wes is a brilliant health secretary. He's focused on getting waiting times down. And on Monday night, the Prime Minister spoke to the Parliamentary Labour Party, and there was, you know, overwhelming unity in that room, and the very strong message from everyone was that the public do not want us to turn in on ourselves, you know, focus on our internal politics. They want us to get on with the big challenges we face. I'm talking about one today, crumbling school buildings. Children, you know, deserve to learn in high quality buildings. These are the kind of things we should be focused on, not internal politics.
Ministers, you mentioned policies. There has been a lot of questions asked about the Prime Minister's decision making, and we learned today that Lord Doyle has been suspended after campaigning for a Labour councillor who was charged with possession of indecent images of children. How wise of it, sir, was it for Sir Keir to elevate him to the House of Lords?
Yeah, I think that Keir Starmer said on the Prime Minister said on Monday night that he wanted he made a commitment that we would push for the highest standards in public life, and you know, as a result of that, he's looked at, you know, this decision, and he's made the right decision.
Should he be stripped of his peerage?
Suspend the whip from Lord Doyle. I think that
should Lord Doyle be stripped?
There's an investigation, Labour Party investigation, going on at the moment. That the Prime Minister's removed the whip. We will wait for that investigation to conclude.
I know you wouldn't, and I wouldn't seek for you to speculate, but I have to ask you, as Schools Minister, about events we saw at a school in Brent yesterday, which would appear that two pupils, I think in their one pre-teens, were stabbed while in their classroom. Schools Minister, what do you say to that?
I mean, it's just absolutely horrific. The school is, you know, not far from my constituency, and it's sent absolute shockwaves through our whole community. You've got two children who are in hospital. I think all of our thoughts will be with them and their families. The police have acted swiftly. Somebody is in custody, and we are backing the police in their investigation and taking this very seriously.
We understand the other child involved was not a pupil. Does this ask questions about safety within schools and school gates and school perimeters, Minister?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that, you know, is already something we're very focused on, ensuring our schools are safe places in tackling knife violence. There is an investigation going on, but if there's things that emerge from that we need to go further on, we won't hesitate to do so.
Final question. I've mentioned The Guardian. Another newspaper, The Times, reports that the Cabinet Secretary, Chris Wormald, is likely to be leaving and in line for a payout of £250,000. Is that justified, Minister?
I mean, this is all speculation. I haven't... All I've seen is the speculation in the newspapers, so there's not much I can say on that at the moment.
Grateful for your time. A 10-year plan to transform schools and colleges across the country. Ultimately, tens of billions of pounds to improve classrooms. Georgia Gould, thank you, Labour MP and Minister for School Standards. Coming up after the news, what does it mean to you, particularly if, as the much of the focus, not all, much of the focus is on pupils' SEND, special education needs and disabilities. We'll be looking at that. 8:15 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
At least 9 people have been killed in what's being described as one of the worst mass shootings in Canada's history. A 13-year-old boy is being questioned on suspicion of attempted murder after a stabbing at a school in northwest London. And a report says 3,700 anti-Semitic incidents were recorded in the UK last year. LBC weather, largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain, the best of any sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still severe delays on the Surrey stretch of the M25 clockwise. It's slow from Junction 8 at Reigate to just before Junction 11 at Chertsey because of two separate accidents. Anti-clockwise is open but slow for about 8 miles because of onlookers, and there was a lorry as well which broke down earlier, although that's now being cleared. Now elsewhere on the motorways, one lane's closed on the M3 southbound at Junction 3 at the Lightwater. A car's broken down. Albert Bridge remains closed today because of the emergency work. And it's very busy on the A13 both ways at the Pitsey flyover following an accident. On the trains, East Midlands Railway and Thameslink services are delayed to and from St Pancras.
This is LBC.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
So, what's on your to-do list today?
Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Psst. Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs, tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 606093.
Old ambition, billions of pounds, but what does it actually mean? 18 minutes after eight. Let's bring Alan, father of two pupils with special needs, who in southwest London, into the conversation. Thank you for holding on. I'm very grateful. Well, you've heard what they're planning. You've heard about safe spaces and less aggressive lightings and other. What do you make of it? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think on the face of it, a lot of this is actually very encouraging. But I think the caveat, I think, which comes with it is what is actually going to be sort of realistically delivered on a day-to-day basis. So I've actually got some experience of my older son who's autistic, and he likely also has ADHD.
How old is the boy, might I ask?
He's 12 now, yeah. So he's been at a secondary school for sort of a year and a bit. And he goes to, like, sort of one of these special inclusion bases, and it is the only one designed this way in the borough, and they take around sort of 10 to 12 quids per year per class, and it's sort of just the right environment. They've got specialist teachers who are used to dealing with SEND kids. And all of these kids are geared up to go on and do GCSEs and exams and everything. And it's been really, really beneficial for him since he's gone there. I think he would have been one of the kids who would have sort of fallen down the cracks if he'd just been straight into mainstream. As such,
how do they handle learning there then, Alan, in a way that perhaps they wouldn't in what I'm going to call a traditional school? I don't mean any offence, but that's what I'm going to say. Call it.
Yep, sure. I mean, he, for example, specifically for his needs, and all the kids in that class will have slightly different needs, but a lot of them will have issues with being able to manage their emotions, how good they are at sort of attention span and sort of a transition from either lesson to lesson or from lunchtime back into lesson. And they often might need instructions sort of clarifying to them to exactly what they need to do. And this is one of the things that my son found so difficult before, was actually being able to understand what he was being asked to do and then to focus on a task. I mean, he's gone from just being able to focus on a task for, say, 15 minutes now to, if he gets a little bit of prompting at the start of a lesson, he can pretty much work independently now for a good half an hour.
Brilliant.
And since he's been at that school, he's even gone as far as reading his own book at choice at home, which is something he'd never, ever done. I mean, reading and writing were the things he found more difficult than anything else. So
you have another child. What can you tell me about him or her?
Yeah. So my other child, Millie, she's 10 years old. She's still in primary school, but she's going to be going to a specialist school come September time. And she's got quite a severe life-limiting neuromuscular disease, which means from a physical perspective, she's sort of wheelchair-bound, and she's got limited use of sort of her arms and everything now as well. Right. And it's progressive. But again, she's got sort of a moderate degree of autism, and so she needs that additional input. I mean, these sorts of
inclusion bases, Alan, or not?
Well, she's in a what they'd call an inclusion base, but it's a far more intensive one. And none of the kids which go to the particular base she goes to at primary school, they all go on to a special, or they should all go on to a specialist school. So these sorts of inclusion bases which are being proposed wouldn't be suitable for her. And I suppose that's one of the issues, is are we still going to see increased sort of specialist provision for the kids that actually do need it?
Lastly, do you think there's enough support, provision and knowledge of children with the needs that you've outlined for your son and your daughter with local authorities, education trusts and other areas, Alan?
I think it's a very mixed bag and very, very patchy. I think one of the issues you've got, I mean, with a lot of these proposals, where are the staff going to be to actually staff these bases? I mean, they're going to need to have that specialist knowledge. They're going to need to know how to work with these kids, and they're not going to magically disappear, you know, appear overnight, these staff. And then we've also got sort of pretty much a shortage across the country of therapists, so speech and language therapists and occupational therapists. They're quite essential for a lot of S&D,
of course,
kids. And I mean, we end up, a lot of the therapists I've ended up working with, particularly for my son and my daughter, a lot of them come from Australia and outside of Europe. Oh. I mean, we are short of that. So again, it's like, I'm not quite sure where these people are going to come from. And the last thing we want is like a specialist inclusion base attached to a secondary school, as good as it sounds, not to be staffed with the people that need to staff it. We don't want them being effectively just a room that you send S&D kids to without any proper provision there.
I will let you get on with your day. Alan, thank you. Alan Courtney, father of two pupils with special needs in North Sheen, from North Sheen in London. That's a key point, isn't it? It's all very well and good luck building these facilities, these safe spaces, less aggressive lighting, whatever else it might be. But if you haven't got the specially trained teachers, we'll take more of your reaction on that in just a moment. But to a story I mentioned in the first hour, let's get into more detail now at 8:24. Anti-Semitic incidents spiked in the UK in the aftermath of a deadly attack in the Manchester synagogue. The aftermath. So instead of showing some degree of sympathy or support, some people took it on themselves to become even more anti-Semitic. I remind you, two people died and three were seriously injured at Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation. It was October of last year. It's the first fatal anti-Semitic terror attack since the Community Security Trust, CST, began recording incidents, and that was in 1984. And for pure clarity, absolute clarity, I want to say that I do serve on one of the boards of the CST. Dave Rich is Policy Director at the CST, joins us now. Take us through these findings, particularly this horrific aspect, Dave, of more anti-Semitism after that fatal attack. Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. I know it's a really shocking detail in the report that we have released today, which shows that last year was the second highest annual total of anti-Jewish hate incidents that we've ever recorded. And we've been collecting these statistics since 1984. But in the aftermath of the first fatal terrorist attack targeting the Jewish community that anyone can remember, at Heaton Park Synagogue in Manchester last October, where two Jewish people lost their lives, while the vast majority of the country were, it responded in absolute shock and horror, and there was an outpouring of sympathy and support for the Jewish community from most people, there was this small minority of people who are so wrapped up in their hatred, it's so deep-seated, that they saw that Jewish people had been killed in a synagogue and were actually excited by it, or took it as an opportunity to express their own anti-Semitism. It's hard to get your head around, but it's an indication, I think, when we try and find solutions to this problem, that this prejudice really is very deep-seated with some people, and it's going to take a lot of work to turn these trends around and force the number of anti-Semitic incidents back down rather than going up each year.
A couple of months after that event in October, we remember the events down in Bondi Beach in Sydney, the people who were trying to celebrate Hanukkah. What happened back in the UK after that, Dave?
We saw a very similar thing, and again, it's hard to really comprehend. We saw another increase in anti-Semitic incidents in the days following the terrible shooting at the Hanukkah party in Bondi Beach that killed 15 people. And it's not that dissimilar to the fact that after the initial terrorist attack on October 7th by Hamas in Israel, we saw this massive spike in anti-Semitism that we're still going through now. There are some people who are so invested in this hatred, so gripped by it, that when they see Jewish people being killed, whether it's in Manchester or Bondi or in Israel, they get excited by it and they want to express that by abusing and harassing any other Jewish people who they see.
Noting that in the answer to my first question, you use the word solutions, to find solutions. What do you believe A or the solutions might be?
I think we need a number of measures. There's no simple quick fix to this. We get a lot of really good support from government and police in protecting the Jewish community from terrorism. There's government funding for security guards and other measures. But we need to find a way to turn off the tap, if you like, to tackle the hateful ideologies and the extremism that is fueling this hatred. And I think that has to be a combination of more prosecutions, more people being convicted for committing these hate crimes, also education to try and turn it off. I think social media is playing a huge role in spreading this kind of hate and extremism. A record proportion of anti-Semitic incidents last year took place on social media, and I think the platforms need to be held to account for this and forced to take much stronger action. And I think really across the board, whether it's regulators, universities, public sector bodies, other institutions, sometimes anti-Semitism and the hatred and extremism connected to the way some people respond to the conflict in the Middle East, they don't get recognized properly as racism. They don't get tackled properly. And I think we need much more and much stronger, more consistent action from those kind of bodies to really help with this.
Dave Richards, Policy Director at the CST Community Security Trust. Thank you for your time, 8:29. Let's come back to the conversation about the classrooms, the revolution in our classrooms, going over 10 years and billions of pounds. Matt says, is there a risk that schools will be spending all their funding on just special needs children? Non-special needs children will just get whatever is left. I don't know, but certainly those are the ones who are possibly in need. We need to look at first, Matt. Kieran says there definitely isn't enough provision for SEND children. This should be welcomed. Too late for my son, unfortunately. We're finally getting the final autism assessment for him. Assessment. At 11 o'clock today, it's taken 2 years. For over 3 years, no provision, help, nor support from school or anyone else. It's been hell for him and for us. Lots of children end up in this position. All right, do keep them coming on that. And coming up after the news, to the story of an Afghan asylum seeker raping a 12-year-old girl in a case which did spark protests. His victim said he laughed while attacking her. He's found guilty of rape and 2 counts of sexual assault. Detective Chief Inspector Colette O'Keefe is from the Warwickshire Police Force.
This has impacted her whole life. You know, she's at the very start of her life, isn't she? She's got to live with this for the rest of her days. And I think that to come forward in the way that she has, she's extremely brave.
And we'll have more on that after this. It's 8:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. And the headlines are with Dominic Ellis.
At least 9 people have been killed in one of Canada's deadliest mass shootings ever. The suspect, who's also dead, opened fire at a school and nearby home in Tumbler Ridge in British Columbia. Counter-terror police are leading the investigation into a stabbing at a school in northwest London. 2 boys aged 12 and 13 are in hospital after yesterday's attack at Kingsbury High School in Brent. And a report says 3,700 anti-Semitic incidents were recorded in the UK last year. It's the second highest annual total after 2023, the year of the October 7th attack on Israel by Hamas. LBC weather, largely cloudy, without breaks of rain through today. The best of any sunny spells in the south. A high of 13 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
The coup that almost was. What happened in the Labour Party? Why didn't Keir Starmer in the end resign after all? And what next for the Health Secretary and maybe plotter Wes Streeter?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maiklis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with Clubcard prices.
we offer a range of cover options, so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Forecasting sun with 100% chance of beach. There's still time to get up to £500 off package holidays in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale. Or get flights from £28 one way. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Limited availability. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATOL protected. T's and C's apply.
Do you know your state pension age? No. Maybe you're not sure. Or you don't know how to check. It's so quick and easy to check online. All you need is your date of birth. Knowing your state pension age helps you think about your future. So check yours today. Search state pension age on gov.uk and simply enter your date of birth. State pension age. It's good to know.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8.33 is the time. So, to this horrific... We've got a lot of court reports today. I'm aware of that. We'll probably try and make this the last one, I sense. But we have an Afghan asylum seeker raping a 12-year-old girl in a case which sparked protests and allegations of a police cover-up. Ahmed Mullahil, who was 23, was finally convicted of multiple sex offences on the very vulnerable victim. The victim reporting that he laughed while attacking her in Nuneaton last summer. He was found guilty of rape and two counts of sexual assault, having admitted a further rape charge before his trial. Now, we need to look at the background here. And we've done some work to give you the context. Foreign nationals were, in 2024, which is the last year for which we have full figures, were responsible for more than a quarter of sexual assaults on women that were successfully prosecuted in Britain. Now, I know that means that 75% were not. I understand that. Or a little under 75%. But we need to be aware of that. We also need to be aware of what some, not all, of these asylum seekers, this level of crimes that they're committing. In July of last year, Mohammed Wahad Mohammed, who was from Syria, was sentenced to 12 years after being convicted of raping a 12-year-old girl in Birmingham. You will remember the famous, or probably infamous, case of Hadesh Kabatu, the asylum seeker from Ethiopia. It was in Epping in Essex, you remember. Two counts of sexual assault on a 14-year-old girl. And it's not that long ago, the case of Deng Cholmajek, a Sudanese national, who followed and ultimately murdered Rhiannon White from that hostel in Walsall. And now we learn of this. I say again. If around 25% of these crimes are committed by foreigners, around 75% are not. Let's stress that. And the idea that everyone arriving in this country on those dinghies and being put up in the accommodation for which we pay is going to commit this level of crime is absolutely wrong and false. But we have to be aware of, can I put it, at least a trend in some of these crimes, that people who arrive in this country, we know virtually nothing about, we give them some form of asylum, we give them some form of accommodation, we give them some form of income, and they respond by, in some cases, not all, in some cases, doing this level of crime. This was addressed by Detective Chief Inspector Colette O'Keefe from Warwickshire Police, saying it's important to remember the impact for the victim.
This has impacted her whole life. You know, she's at the very start of her life, isn't she? She's got to live with this for the rest of her days. And I think that to come forward in the way that she has, she's extremely brave.
Let's turn to Robert Bates, Research Director at the Centre for Migration Control. And these are the sort of figures that you and your colleagues pore over on a regular basis. I, as a journalist, come to them in the aftermath of horrific attacks such as the one that went before the courts yesterday. What's your interpretation? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes. Well, first of all, I think it's very important that the government actually now begins to publish data on the immigration status of individuals that are being convicted of these crimes. We do hold information on nationality, and that allows us to use it as a rough proxy for crime rates amongst asylum seekers. So if we take it in this recent instance, it was an Afghan national. If we look at Afghan nationals, their conviction rate for sexual offences is put at somewhere between 15 and 20 times that of British nationals. And if you compare the Afghan conviction rate to other migrant groups, other nationalities, you can see that actually in 2024 there were more Afghan sexual offence convictions than there were from Japan, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, France, Germany and America combined. They are one of the biggest nations in raw numbers of convictions of these types. So there is a clear overrepresentation, whichever way you cut it, within sex crime conviction data of those individuals that we know are more likely to be coming across, say, for instance, on small boats or entering the UK through other irregular means. I do think, unfortunately, the government has been far too lackadaisical in actually collecting data of a quality where it is able to publish them as official accredited statistics. I think if they were to do so, we'd be able to take better policy decisions. We'd be able to actually see trends and take decisions, for instance, as to whether an individual who's come in over the channel is an unvetted individual. They should maybe be in secure facilities whilst their asylum claim is being processed, rather than, as is currently the case, being put in hotels or houses of multiple occupancy and allowed to just walk around the community.
But, Mr. Bates, this lack of clarity or lack of publication, is it by accident or design, in your view?
Probably at the moment, given the government's failure to clamp down on this crisis, is something that is beneficial to them, because it avoids a very, very stark conversation about this issue. I do think there is an element of lax data collection, just because it wasn't really, until very, very recently, deemed an appropriate topic of conversation. It wasn't seen as a necessary data point, and therefore there is undoubtedly some element of verification and data cleaning up that does need to take place. But I don't think that is beyond the wits of the Home Office, because it does currently have open lines to every single police force and does collect the data on every foreign national that is convicted and does carry out checks on their immigration status. So it isn't a big leap for them to take the raw data that they are being given, clean it up and then make it publishable. But I do think at the moment, were they to do so, there would be conversations that perhaps would not be beneficial to them. And because they have previously muted some sense of a crime league table before, but that was only for a very, very small section of foreign nationals who have committed crimes, those that are eligible for deportation.
But lastly, Mr. Bates, isn't there an argument that this ignorance is not healthy, because ignorance often breeds fear? If people don't know what's going on in their local community, whether it be Epping or Nuneaton, it doesn't matter, then there's speculation. The speculation could be totally false. Whereas if you put out the true figure, the true facts, then you are going to address that and there will be no speculation. Mr. Bates?
I agree with you completely. You know, transparency is the best disinfectant. It allows for clear, level-headed conversation rather than, social media speculation and maybe actually temperatures are more difficult to control and things escalate and away from the government's ability to actually have proper discussion, and instead being sort of buffeted by more amplified conversations that aren't very useful for moving things forward.
Robert Bates, your research director at the Centre for Migration Control. Thank you for your input. 20 minutes before nine. Coming to you, Ashley. I notice you're not a million miles away from where you live. Alex in Surrey, why are you tiptoeing around this? You're scared to tell the truth. If these people weren't here, there'd be 25% less crime. Some poor girls' lives would be saved. Stop being wet and tell the truth. Alex, I agree. It's another day with another set of headlines. Another person who's come to this country, supposedly seeking asylum, we've housed, we've given some money to, and they've responded by, in this case, raping an innocent girl, a 12-year-old girl. But you have to be aware of the responsibility that we have in a station. We can't suddenly say all these people are like that, because they're not. But is it, Alex, is it a growing trend? Yes, it would appear to be. Is it of enormous concern? Yes. Do we need more data? Yes, that is the way to deal with it. You can't just suddenly decide that everybody getting off a dinghy is like that. Ashley's in Coventry, not a million miles away from the scene of this one in Nuneaton. Ashley, what do you say? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Last time I spoke to you was about a month ago when a young girl, 15-year-old girl, was raped in Leamington, where my sister lives.
I remember that conversation. Yeah. That's, we better be careful, because presumably that's still going through the courts, so if we...
No, that one's finished. It's done guilty.
I'm sorry. Okay, okay.
Yes, and then, you know, yesterday...
Can you remind me of the circumstances of that? Just a little more detail of the Leamington attack, sorry.
It was two Afghan men in Leamington, sort of coerced a girl in a park to a secluded area, and then raped her.
Right, and that they have gone, I presume they've gone to jail, have they been convicted?
Yes, yes.
Right, so, that's Leamington Spa, the other one is Nuneaton, you're sort of in, almost in a circle there, or in a triangle in Coventry. What are people saying about this?
Well, they're upset, obviously they're angry, you know, we've been talking about immigration for 20 years now, when are we going to get to grips with it, and start controlling these numbers?
How should it be controlled, Ashley?
Well, it needs to be a multi-pronged approach, really, doesn't it? We need to have proper deterrence. You know, if you do come here, you will be removed. So whether that's reforming legislation, human rights acts, whatever. We need people in the water, because the French aren't doing anything to really assist us, are they?
No. Now, the judge at this case said, of course, this asylum seeker, Ahmad Mulahil, will be liable for deportation, but of course he won't, because we don't send people back to Afghanistan because it's deemed an unsafe country, Ashley.
Yes, exactly. Liable doesn't mean he will be, you know, and then 10, 20 years from now he could be roaming our streets again with our children.
Lastly, to those, and they're already piling in on the emails and the text saying that this sort of view is racist, you shouldn't behave in this fashion, how would you respond, Ashley?
Furiously. You know, I've got young children at home. I'm at work today. My partner will be taking my children to the park, or, you know, she could be assaulted, my children could be assaulted. You know, it's causing concern in the community, which isn't needed, really, if it was just addressed once and for all.
Ashley, thanks for your input. Look after your children. William's in Edinburgh. William, your take on this. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, my response to the previous callers is, if these asylum seekers weren't here, if none of them were here, then you'd be just concerned about people who are already from this country who are capable of being dangerous. Because every life, every day is in danger. If I walk across the road, I live in a very busy area, I could get run over by a car.
But you wouldn't seek to increase your danger of being hit by a car 15 to 20 times, would you?
Obviously not, no. But then again, let's just not get sidetracked on me saying that. What I mean to say is that every human being from every country is capable of all sorts of things. And if we shut the borders and no immigration and no asylum seekers come in, then our lives wouldn't be any better or any safer.
Well, the lives of these victims, this 12-year-old girl, I would put forward, has probably been ruined by this arrival from Afghanistan. So surely something needs to be done to stop this, because I give you other examples of a young woman who was actually murdered by someone who came here from Somalia and other countries.
Yes, and Sudan, from what I heard.
Yes.
That's a good question, Nick. I don't know what we do in that case. I mean, I think we just have to be more... What's the word? Or more vigilant. Well, just like I do when I go to an airport, when I wonder, this person looks right, does that person look right?
But don't we need greater protection? Don't we need to try and ensure that these people don't get in the first place?
Well, if we know about them in the first place, but how do you do that? Because you see, some person could be documented, for example, but they might not necessarily know. We might not necessarily know what they might do in the future, like what happened in 9/11. They were documented, they were educated, but they obviously found something a bit more important.
William, look after yourself. Thank you. We'll have more views on that coming up after the news. We'll go back into the classroom, this tens of billions of pounds ultimately, to try and make classrooms more conducive to learning, particularly for those pupils with SEND, special educational needs and disabilities. And then in the next hour...
Tesco. Every little helps.
Every little helps, but unfortunately there's not much help in the workplace. Tesco's chief executive warning Sir Keir Starmer, the nation is sleepwalking into worklessness epidemic. We'll have more on that in the next hour. 8:45, LBC News headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
At least 9 people have been killed in one of Canada's deadliest mass shootings ever. Speaking to Nick, a schools minister has praised the response of the police following a double stabbing at a school in northwest London. And secondary schools in England will be expected to have a so-called inclusion base for pupils with special educational needs and disabilities. LBC weather largely cloudy without breaks of rain. The best of any sunny spells in the south. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Not looking good at all on the M25 in Surrey. So clockwise, a delay of about 10 miles from Junction 8 at Reigate to 11 at Chertsey because of these two separate accidents. And then anti-clockwise is very busy because of onlookers, but now there's been another accident. It's at Junction 12 at the M3, so that's obviously adding to those queues. Albert Bridge remains closed both ways for the emergency works and very busy on the A13 both ways to the Pitsea flyover. And that's also after an accident. On the trains, East Midlands and Thameslink services are delayed by about 45 minutes to and from St Pancras because of overhead wire problems, and train services to and from Stansted Airport remain delayed. That was after the signal failure from earlier.
This is LBC.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Okay, do emails. Burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep. You can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
Did you know that if you buy your train tickets early, you could get a better price with Southeastern Advance Tickets? Whether you're planning a fun family day out or heading into town for a meeting, the earlier you buy, the cheaper your ticket could be. See our terms and conditions to check if it's the right ticket for you. Buy your Advance train tickets now from the Southeastern app or website and pay no booking fees.
Southeastern.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig, tailored for you.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato, and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces with serious flavor. Dolmio, yeah.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Coming to you, Zoe, you're going to take us about your classroom in just a moment, but that conversation about the events in Nuneaton and surrounding areas. Charles says, it's not racist to tell the truth. No, it's not, but we must always contextualise. Joy says, I cannot believe there are people in this world with a mind like that caller from Edinburgh. I'm shaking with rage at the comments. How dare he victim blame and say maybe we need to get more vigilant? That's Joyce in Hornchurch. That's interesting, actually, that interpretation for that poor 12-year-old girl whose life will never be the same again. And, of course, the other victims that I mentioned, the victims of the man up in Epping in Essex and other cases. We'll come back to that. In some instances, effectively importing sex criminals, and there seems to be no way currently to stop that. I say again, 75% of these sex crimes are not committed by those arrivals. Let's go into the classroom with Zoe in Dudley. Zoe, how do you remember your classroom or your classrooms? Good morning.
Good morning. First time to all of them. I'm a bit nervous.
Oh, lovely to have you on. How's Dudley this morning, Zoe? Is it wet?
Very.
Oh, God, it's never going to stop raining, I don't think. My Lord. Right, how long ago were you in class? What are you going back? What are you? How long have you been out of school then, Zoe?
Okay, then, so I'm 28. I've just finished work.
Yep.
So just bear with me.
Of course.
So I've got some stuff that I need to say first.
Okay.
So when I was born with moderate learning difficulties.
Okay.
And then I was re-diagnosed to have effective dyspraxia, dyscalculia and oral speech delay.
Let's just go slowly. Effective dyspraxia and what was the other one?
Dyscalculia. So it's maths, English, communication and understanding, in other words.
Oh, right. So, okay.
Every day.
How common is that?
I couldn't really say because when I was first diagnosed when I was really young. Sorry, it's really complex. I'm going to try and be as brief as
possible.
Okay.
Yeah, of course.
So it was just, I couldn't do stuff for myself. My speech was non-existent. My balance was non-existent and all of this stuff. So when it came to education, so I've listened to the minister earlier. And she was saying something about small classes.
Yes.
Now, I'm only 28, so I'm probably about 8 to 12 of minutes. But it's already happened. So I went to 2 primary schools. I went to 1 mainstream primary school. I had to be dropped out of that because I couldn't cope speech-wise, understanding.
When you say you couldn't cope, you just couldn't keep up with the lessons, you didn't understand the teachers. What? Just to expand a little, if you would, Zoe.
Yeah, so it was the... Just couldn't understand the teachers. There was no help. And then come to secondary school, I went to a full-on special needs secondary school. My problem with this is that any time, I'm sorry, I'm going to offend a lot of people.
Well,
it's all well and good saying we've got to improve this and going to put this into classrooms and what have you. It's more about the teachers. I think there's got to be more courses about actually how to deal. Yes, Down syndrome, autism, fantastic. Physical disability is fantastic. But to me, I just feel when it's something that is not physical looking, it's kind of like over, just says, oh yeah, you're absolutely fine. And I feel there's got to be more emphasis and more attention on just the smaller stuff, the more complex stuff. Because this is actually true. When it came to autism, like, I was under the speech and language therapy.
Yeah.
And my mum fought tooth and nail to get that. And they were saying, oh, no, people with autism, people with Down syndrome is like a lot, is more of a priority than your child. Your child can cope. Well, I couldn't cope. I was in bottom step. I failed subject. I was stressing about going into school. Yeah.
Okay. So Zoe, let me ask you. You say you just finished your work. Might I ask, what do you do for a living now?
I'm a cleaner, and I'll come on to this. It's more what I've got to talk about.
So there you are. You've gone from, without being too nasty about it, you had a pretty poor start. You had all sorts of needs, and there you are. Keeping down a regular job. Uh-huh. You're paying tax. You're being paid. How have you done that? When did it get better for you, if I may put it rather crudely?
It really didn't, to be quite honest. So I know everyone's going to be like, oh my God, well, I'm in the same shit. I applied for 20 plus jobs.
Go ahead. Yep, sorry.
So I was put on Universal Credit and then I applied for 20 plus jobs.
Right.
And then my coach at the Universal Credit says, you know, Zoe, you've got so much potential.
Yeah, you're great. You're such a bright young woman.
The minute that you say you've got a disability, companies don't want to know you. And I actually saw that at front. I was like, here's my CV. He's a woman who's just got experience. Okay, we like you on paper. Is there anything else that you need to know? Yeah, I've got disabilities. Oh, okay, then.
Lastly, so you listen to the minister. You're sort of proof of how you can put a life together. What do you think the government needs to know about people such as yourself, children, when you're a child, you have those issues, that they don't know or they're not acting on now? What would you say to them, Zoe?
It's more physical-based. It's more more physical learning, more than lighting. Yes, I'm going to offend loads of people, but I'm seeing it from my perspective.
You keep making me nervous when you say offend. I don't know what you're going to say next. I've already misheard you once. Yeah, go on.
It's got to be more physical learning. Stuff has got to be... Yes, it's fantastic. Get them intertwined with normal people, but it's just not how people work.
All right. I will leave it there and let you get some rest. Thank you, Zoe. Well done. not the best of starts, most advantageous of starts, and look what you've achieved. You're in work, you're being paid, and you're paying tax. Congratulations. Let's come back to our conversation about events up at Warwick Court, Crown Court, and John's in Coventry, which is not a million miles from that court. John, you're on the radio. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you? How's the people of Coventry in that area? I'm nervous, I would imagine.
Yeah, it seems to be a sort of regular thing around here. I don't know what's going on, but, I mean, it seems to only affect lower working class areas, you know. It seems to be one of those things where they push everybody into a certain area and think it's not a problem. But, I mean, I was just saying to your researcher there, I said, well, you know, if you're in a corporate environment, people get vetted before going in, so you wouldn't have somebody who's you know, gun maniac, you know, somebody who's got questionable sexual morals and all that. So the argument is not all asylum seekers are like that. No, they're not. I agree. But if one or two start coming in with various sort of nefarious purposes, and you should stop them all. You should stop them all until we get a vetting procedure and saying, look...
But I don't know that the one we're talking about that was dealt with by court, there's no background to that. I mean, can I put it to you, and I want to choose my words carefully, but if you come from a country like Afghanistan, where there's nothing like the liberal approach to sexuality, to possibly even walking down the road, I don't know, in a miniskirt or whatever, people arrive here, they are not used to Western style of life. John?
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, you walk down the street in Tehran in a miniskirt and you know all about it,
absolutely.
You know, but what I'm saying is, until we establish what level of, you know, sort of, you've got to put them through an education procedure before they come to the UK. You've got to sort of say, look, you can't just turn up because the police are going to get overrun. The sort of social services are going to have a problem. And the children as well. I mean, we've had the issues with children, rape gangs, and all the rest of it.
Yes,
nobody seems to bother about them. It seems like an expendable sort of cost to it all. And you think, well, let's think about them first. I know people have been through traumatic times in the other side of the world, and they've come through the whole of Europe, and they've decided, for whatever reason, to come across the channel from safe countries. Yeah, I get all that, but think about it. I mean, these kids are like, you know, single figures. You know, you're sort of thinking they're totally innocent.
I know. It's 12-year-old girl effectively groomed by this man, by the 23-year-old. John, thank you. Carrie and Bromley, your take on this. Good morning.
Good morning. I think that until identity is verified, and any males who are claiming to be boys who've gone through puberty should actually be detained securely.
But again, this guy, this 23-year-old Ahmed Mulak, he's got no previous. So what's happened, I think, is he arrives from a very repressive country such as Afghanistan. He's settled in this particular part of Warwickshire. He starts seeing young girls and something, by the way, that there's no fault of the victim, I hasten to add. You should be able to do what you want to wear. But something just trips up. I don't know that would solve it, would it, Carrie?
It wouldn't solve the whole problem, but at least it would give some sort of, years ago when I was teaching years ago before I lost my sight. I was teaching in Enfield,
right.
And we had lots of refugees come, and some of them I just felt my heart went out to them because they were so genuine.
Of course.
But I was teaching year six, and there was a boy in my class who was clearly in his early 20s. But because he'd got rid of his family and himself had got rid of all of his ID, he was accepted at that point. Now, I know now they do wrist checks and that sort of thing to check and verify a certain amount of age, but I don't know how long they wait before they do that.
Carrie, I have enjoyed our conversation and indeed your reference from when you were teaching. The music means we have to move on. I look forward to speaking to you again. Have a good day down in Bromley. Coming up after the news, as the Prime Minister boasts about a working class cabinet, the boss of one of our biggest companies say that we're sliding into a worklessness epidemic. We'll give you more details on that. Talking about the workplace, Jan Woodward has experienced menopause.
It just took all of my confidence, took my memory, and when I was talking to people, it was all jumble coming out. I couldn't understand what was happening to me because I was a strong person.
This is a tribunal, says asking a woman if she's menopausal is not harassment, and...
I feel it in my finger, I feel it in my toes.
And you feel it on your head and your body and everyone else. That's wet, 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 and I'll be asking, when will it finally stop raining? News is next.
on your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, at least nine people have been killed in one of Canada's deadliest mass shootings ever. The suspect, who's also dead, opened fire at a school and nearby home in Tumbler Ridge. Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney has cancelled the planned trip to the Munich Security Conference. Premier of British Columbia David Eby has updated reporters.
Right now, information is very limited as police do their work. And the RCMP has asked for patience as they work through methodically to ensure that they are supporting families and getting to the bottom of what happened today. I'd like to take this opportunity to ask British Columbians, to ask all Canadians, to wrap the people of Tumbler Ridge, wrap these families with love. This is something that will reverberate for years to come.
A 13-year-old boy is being questioned on suspicion of attempted murder after a stabbing at a school in London. Two boys, aged 12 and 13, were seriously injured at Kingsbury High School in Brent yesterday lunchtime. Counter-terror officers are leading the investigation, but the Met Police say it's not being treated as terrorism. Schools Minister Georgia Gould was asked by Nick whether security measures in schools need to be reviewed.
This is something that, is already something we're very focused on, ensuring our schools are safe places and tackling knife violence. There is an investigation going on, but if there's things that emerge from that we need to go further on, we won't hesitate to do so.
A group that monitors anti-Semitism in the UK says it saw a spike in incidents around the time of the Manchester synagogue attack. 40 cases were recorded on the day last October and the same number the day after. 3,700 reports of anti-Semitism were recorded across the UK last year, the second highest on record. Sir Keir Starmer is preparing for PMQs later after fighting back against pressure to quit. He's promised he won't walk away from his mandate and has hit out at infighting within the Labour Party. And secondary schools in England will be expected to have a so-called inclusion base for pupils with special educational needs and disabilities. The government is setting out a decade-long plan to renew buildings ahead of planned reforms to the sector. Dedicated spaces will also be created outside of classrooms where students can access targeted support. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 19 at 10,373. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain through today. The best of any sunny spells in the south. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, have you got anything to help my money go further?
Well, if you want to make some big savings, make sure to use Nectar Prices and your Nectar Prices at Sainsbury's. Together they can save you over £450 a year on your food shop.
Bring it on.
Download the Nectar app and tap into great savings. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus Nectar app required. For full terms, see help.sainsburys.co.uk/help/Nectar Prices.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 4 minutes after nine on Wednesday, the 11th of February, as the Prime Minister boasts of his cabinet being working class, the most working class cabinet of all time. The boss of Tesco says the nation is sliding into worklessness. We'll look at that into more detail. Plus, to the Employment Tribunal, asking a woman if she's menopausal, even making a sort of semi-gag towards it, is not harassment. I'll be asking you if you have battled, if you are battling, if you are looking at the change with a certain degree of concern. We'll get into that conversation. And as it's rained every single day since the start of the year...
Why does it always rain?
And in parts of Scotland, there has been no sunshine since late January and none on the way. I'll ask, when will it finally stop bloody raining?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Britain is sleepwalking into a worklessness epidemic with millions out of a job and on benefits. So says someone who should know, the boss of the nation's biggest supermarket. I speak of Ashwin Prasad, chief executive of Tesco. At one point, I don't know if it's still the case, but £1 in every 8 on the high street was spent at Tesco. I don't know whether that's up or down, but just think of that. That was once the heft of Tesco. I sense, possibly with the arrival, well, the arrival, with the growth of firms such as Lidl and Aldi, that might have changed a bit, but they are still a huge, huge player. Now, Mr. Prasad, talked about economic growth under threat because an increasing number of people were choosing welfare over work. Isn't that the reality? He was speaking at an event organised by the Resolution Foundation and said, and I quote, "We've been sleepwalking into a quiet epidemic that's keeping millions of people out of work. My perspective from leading a major employer in this country is that far fewer people are in work than there could be. This means that instead of investing in parts of national life that might stimulate investment and growth into the wider economy, we are spending an ever-increasing proportion of our national income on out-of-work benefits." Well, let's put that to a couple of people. First off, well, let's hear a little. I'm so sorry. I've just been told I'm so sorry. We did actually hear some of the comments now from the chief executive. This was Ashwin Prasad speaking at that event yesterday.
It's well documented just how much pressure has been piled onto the disposable incomes and household budgets of working people over the last decade or so. But at the same time as that squeeze has tightened, we have been sleepwalking into a quiet epidemic that is keeping millions of people out of work. My perspective from leading a major employer in this country is that far fewer people are in work than they could be. This means that instead of investing in parts of national life that might stimulate investment and growth into the wider economy, we are spending an ever-increasing proportion of our national income on out-of-work benefits. DWP forecasts speak for themselves. This coming financial year, we're set to spend over $300 billion on social security.
$300 billion is the figure there. By the way, how many staff do you imagine Tesco employ? Anybody? Around 330,000, I'm told. That is incredible. Imagine that's full and part-time. So he certainly knows what he's talking about. First to Devon Gelani, who's director of the Policy and Practice Think Tank, one of the architects of the government's universal credit policy. I have a note, you were at the event yesterday, is that right? How did the chief executive's comments go down? What sort of conversation did it stimulate? Morning to you.
Morning, really good to be on. I think the first thing is it was brilliant to have a major employer at one of these events to talk about the pressures that they as Tesco are feeling, both as, I think the great thing about being Tesco is they're feeling the squeeze as an employer, and they're also seeing the squeeze on people's pockets as consumers, and just reminding everyone how thin margins are in the supermarket game. And, you know, I think he's right to be worried, but these in public policy, these problems have been well known. I've been on your show to talk about them for some time. I think one thing to pull out is on the social security side, the problem we understand is disability benefits. So if you're trying to find workless households, it's really hard to find any unless you're looking at households that are on disability benefits, often with very good reason. But we're talking about the health drivers of these challenges have been sort of building for many years and then accelerated and brought forward because of the pandemic. I think the other group to really worry about are young people. There was a ridiculous stat that I can't quite remember, but basically young people are starting work much later than they were when probably you and I first got our first jobs when I was 16. You know, the message I think to anyone who's leaving school around that age is if there's an opportunity, take it. Don't worry too much about, don't be too picky at a young age. I think it's really important just to get into the labour market. And I think as well, you know, we did hear a lot about job creation. So what is stopping... It's really, I would have loved to have asked Ashwin, you know, what are the things that are holding back Tesco creating more jobs or employers creating more jobs? Is it the pressures from the government? Is it the squeeze on consumer spending that you're seeing? Is it things like the pressure to spend more on technology and AI, which means there are kind of fewer of those entry level jobs coming in? I think it's a combination of all three, but I'd probably say lifting some pressure on employers would be a really good idea right now, because without the jobs, we're in real trouble.
Devon, let me ask you this. Upon hearing the warning, as you rightly say, from a considerable employer such as Tesco, what should a government do?
Yeah, like I said, I think that last comment is it. Taking some pressure off employers who want to create...
But they've gone completely the other way, haven't they?
Well, I think that has been probably, the government's made a few missteps in its early years, and I think that is one of the biggest that's going to stick with people for some time. Because while you're trying to bring the benefits bill down, you can reform Social Security, you can do an awful lot to try and tackle that problem. But if you're reducing the number of jobs there are to go into at the same time, and in particular, entry-level roles are the ones that are probably being squeezed the most, we're going to feel that. And it's going to become, you know, it almost makes the Secretary of State for Work and Pensions job a lot harder, because you're trying to get people off Social Security, but the jobs aren't there. So I think if the government was to wave a magic wand, it would probably be things like the national insurance increase, some sort of reversal, some other mechanism to just boost job. We just need the economy to grow faster if we're going to tackle this problem.
Enjoyed our time together. Devon Galani, thank you. You're Director of the Policy and Practice Think Tank, and you were at that event yesterday. Listening, Rachel Harris, who's a business finance influencer, financial columnist at Stylist magazine, and founder of Accountant She, and joins me now. What do you take from the boss of Tesco's words, particularly when it comes to getting young people into employment? Morning to you.
Good morning. Yeah, I think it's absolutely fascinating hearing, you know, one of the largest employers in the UK echo a lot of the thoughts that I see daily. And even as a business owner, you know, we've scaled super rapidly. And I feel like right now, under a Labour government, we are being taxed for creating jobs in the UK with the national insurance increases. We've got frozen thresholds for income tax. We've got increased dividend taxes. And so as an owner of a small business, who we are a grassroots British business, and so all of the employees that we hire are on payroll in-house based in the UK. And I'm competing with competitors who are choosing to outsource labor costs to other countries to actually undercut us on price. And so I think, you know, we can do all of the analysis into the can't work versus the won't work, where that problem is. But I think in the UK right now, it doesn't matter if you are, you know, a high street household name like Tesco or an independent values driven small business like ours, we are actually being taxed for creating jobs.
Tell us a little bit more about Accountant She, what it does, and what I would imagine what the hurdles are, because you sound as if you probably want to take on more staff, but you feel a little unable to at the moment, Rachel.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we are one of the fastest scaling accounting firms. We were, you know, on our dining room table 5 years ago, and now we have a Manchester office, a Southern office.
Oh, brilliant. I'm so pleased.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's just been, you know, we are taxed. We've got increased national insurance costs. The apprenticeship schemes within the accounting industry are incredibly strong. Like, so many talented team members choose to not go to university, not take on student debt, and actually come. But actually, in the last few years under a Labour government, we've seen all of the Level 7 apprenticeship funding completely cut. So when I was a trainee, employers were paid £1,500 to take on apprentices, as well as having all of the funding paid for. We've lost all of that. And so last year we had to do a 7% price increase in order to counteract that for our customers. And so, yeah, just really the too long didn't read for us as a small business employer who is, you know, trying to employ a completely UK-based team, is with national insurance increases, with the cuts in apprenticeship funding, we are being taxed on creating jobs in the UK.
So let me ask you this lastly. As a business founder and a business that knows about facts and figures, what needs to be done, I sense possibly by a chancellor, in the next budget, or business measures that would help businesses such as yours, Rachel?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think no system is perfect. And I think this problem, as we've said, as the previous guests have said, this has been building since 2020. I think no system is perfect. But even with this, I think it's been fascinating to see Tesco coming out and almost echoing the thoughts of small businesses. I think small businesses don't need a crackdown or a huge reform. Actually, we need a system that not only moves people back into work, but is incentivizing small businesses to do that too. Because as a small business, like, we don't have the tools, we don't have the large HR departments you know, support people in phased returns to work from issues that have been happening since 2020.
Really enjoyed speaking with you. We'll talk about business again. Rachel Harris, good luck with what you're doing. Accountant She, one of the country's fastest growing modern accounting firms. So what's the reality? Annette, you'll be the first caller. What's the reality? A benefits bill that will go north of £320 billion. Now, some of that is pensions, by the way. I appreciate that. But the can't work or unable to work debate goes on. We'll get into more details on that after the 9:15 LBC News headlines. Then Dominic Ellis.
At least 9 people have been killed in one of Canada's deadliest mass shootings ever. A government minister has told Nick that security measures could be reviewed in schools following a double stabbing in northwest London yesterday. And a group that monitors anti-Semitism in the UK says it saw a spike in incidents around the time of the Manchester synagogue attack last year. LBC weather largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain, the best of any sunny spells in the south. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 clockwise from junction 8 at Reigate to 11 at Chertsey. It's because of two separate accidents on that stretch. That's slow for over 10 miles. Also on the M25 anti-clockwise, it's very slow from junction 14 at Heathrow and 12 at the M3 after an accident and now a skip lorry has broken down. Albert Bridge remains closed both ways. That's causing lengthy delays. The A1's very slow both ways to Apex Corner. The traffic lights aren't working. The A2 slow eastbound up to the Ebbsfleet turnoff after an accident. And on the trains, Thames Link and East Midlands Railway services are delayed to and from St Pancras.
This is LBC.
Tesco Finest Alderwood Smoked Bacon. The foundation for the ultimate bacon butty. It's why only the finest bacon is traditionally hand-cured with Cornish sea salt, delicately smoked over Alderwood and matured for at least 19 days. Layer it between slices of crusty bread and savour its richer flavour. All you have to think about is brown sauce or red. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
This Wednesday, the £12 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Yes. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
And Ed, I'll come to you in a moment, but already the hate has started. This is from Lee in Frankfurt. As was pointed out in the Financial Times, Tesco operating profit up 10.6% to £3.1 billion last year, only offer 450 apprenticeships per year, cutting 400-plus jobs. Do you still agree with him? Angela, Tesco profits last year, £3 billion, most of their workforce having to claim university. That's not true, by the way. Their CEO on a multi-million salary. Oh, God, how dare these companies make profits? Every company should just about bounce on the bottom line, probably just about making enough so they can have a round of drinks and a coffee. What is the what don't you get? When a company makes profits, it will expand. When it will expand, it will take people on. I know Tesco's have let people go, and I know I'm not a particular fan of the idea that you can never actually find a human being there, and there's all automated tills. I hate all of that. I hate it. But they're still paying 330,000 people. So, Lee, Angela, when you employ... I tell you what, when you employ 3,000... When you employ 33,000... No, when you employ 330,000 people, I think you're entitled to a view. Annette's in Solihull. Annette, what do you want to say? Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, you're not going to like me, Nick.
I'll always like you, Annette. Don't know what I think about Solihull, but I know I like Annette.
OK. So this is a different perspective.
For
25-plus years, I used to work in... a college environment and then private companies that work with long-term unemployed people to get them into work. Okay. So these were people who had, you know, very serious, grave conditions that were never going to get better.
Were these emotional health problems then, just to clarify?
No. People with all sorts, people with Parkinson's disease.
Oh, right, okay.
Across the board, you know, I mean, some of them had mental health problems due to the fact that they weren't able to get a job.
Right.
So I'd like to offer a different perspective.
Please.
And I'm not going to name the name of the company that I work for, but it was, trust me, it was very, very well known and respected. It was linked into, it was formed when soldiers coming back from the war weren't able to work because they'd lost limbs and everything. That's where the company began.
Mm-hmm.
So as an employment advisor, I used to use work experience as a method of giving people experience, updating their CV, getting them back into the workplace to gain confidence mm-hmm. and hopefully get a job. So mm-hmm. it was always on a temporary basis that this work placement was arranged. And quite often, they worked out really, really well. But then, unfortunately, what used to happen, and I'm not just talking about this particular retailer, I'm talking about across the industry, they'd happily have somebody on a work experience for 12 weeks with the promise, oh, you're doing so well, and regular reviews, and I used to go in and speak to the HR managers to make sure that they were going well. But it was very, very rare that anything other than 3 or 4 hours a week work was ever offered to anybody.
Right. Why was that?
Well, because they do, invariably back then, and I think it's the same now, they don't do full-time permanent contracts in retail. And I mean, in the good old days, I mean, I'm not that old yet, but I mean, I remember my dad worked in a factory and lots of people worked in that kind of environment, you know, sort of working class people had working class jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they had jobs that were permanent. They had rights, they had holiday pay, they had sick, you know what I mean? Nowadays, nothing. But sadly, the previous administration of government got rid of the companies like mine, and I could name half a dozen of them, that had specialist employment advisors that understood disability, understood the needs of the employer, that it had to be the right fit and the right match, but could match people and do it in a supportive and proper way. But they just got rid of them all. So it was all brought in-house for the job centre advisors to deal with. So that's why there's so many people that aren't in work.
And I'm not going to fall out with you at all. You told your story brilliantly. I will end there so I can get other people involved. Thank you. On that subject, Barry in Bucknell says, a few years ago when you went into a Tesco, there were butchers, fishmongers, bakers and even human beings on the tills. Now, all meat comes in pre-packaged, fish is pre-packaged, all bakery products come in part-packed and ready to just be put in the oven by store assistants and self-service tills. Tesco has done its fair share of job cutting. That's a very fair observation, Barry, and I'm thinking of my local Tesco, and that's exactly what's played out there. Ian's in Warrington on this. Ian, your view. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Hello, yeah, so I've got a different take on not Tesco itself, but many companies, large companies that we all rely on day in, day out.
Mm.
My partner was employed by them for many, many years on a zero-hour contract.
Oh.
He was given the option to go on a full-time contract, which he took, because it guaranteed him work. 2 months into that contract, it was reneged, and he was asked to go back to his zero-hour contract.
Right.
How did he
react to that?
It was unfortunate. It was a bit of a bitter pill to swallow.
Sure.
But so he did that. And then a couple of weeks or months later, he was told that there was no work and he would be better off claiming benefits on Universal Credit. So he went to the local job centre. He's been claiming Universal Credit now for the last 2 years. He has been applying for a number of jobs in the health sector, in the hospitality sector, in retail.
Thankfully he was offered
a job last week. But my point is that because he has, going off what one of your callers spoke about earlier, autism, a lot of employers don't really want to take that risk on for the fact that, you know, he may not be able to function one day, or he may have a bit of a breakdown, or, you know, and it's just unfortunate, and it's not a very nice thing to see and happen to a loved one, you know.
And he just wants to work.
Exactly, that's it. That's exactly right. I get up in the morning, I go to work, he gets up with me and he's like, another day of me being sat on the sofa bored.
Right.
But thankfully, he has a job. He's just waiting for all his references and DBS checks to come through.
Okay. When will he know, lastly?
I think he'll find out probably by the end of February. All the reference checks were put in at the start of the week, so hopefully it shouldn't be too long.
All right, I hope it works out well. Give him my best wishes, Ian. Thank you. Jill picking up on a point that others have made. I find this hilarious. Supermarkets have gone to self-checkout. Our local Tesco went from 5 tills to 1, and that's rarely manned. It does go both ways. Yes, that is a fair point. But I do think the government does need to listen to him about worklessness as a in general. Lewis in Folkestone. Lewis, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Hiya. So as somebody who grew up kind of in the early noughties and the late 90s,
yes.
I grew up in a work family full of two parents, one out and provided. But for myself...
Sorry, two parents? What did you say? One what? Sorry, two parents?
They both went out and provided.
They both went out and provided. Got it. Okay. Yep. Both went out and worked. Got it. Yep.
So that was how I was brought. However, I seem to be the only one of my five siblings who go out to work full time. Now, all of them are able
bodied. What do the others do?
They claim welfare. It's all that they do, unfortunately. It's something that I feel quite ashamed of. Because it's not how we were raised. They all able-bodied people. They have no excuse not to work. They just choose not to. I just think there's a fundamental...
You ever challenge them? Are they all brothers? So you're one of five. Are you all boys or half...
We're all boys. We're all boys. I'm the middle child.
Right, okay. So when you get together, I don't know, Christmas or holiday, anniversaries or whatever it might be, do you ever say, are you still not working?
Yeah, so it does cause conflicts.
And when you say, let's use my name, Nick, are you still not working? What does he say back to you?
They just say, oh, there's nothing out there, or, oh, I've been applying. And the problem is they do it to an extent of, they look for jobs where they can still claim universal credit, or while working the minimum hours that they can do, but still be entitled to it. So for myself, I find it really difficult to even kind of look at them in the same light, because I feel that once you have children, the art to provide is necessity. It's not just about looking at somebody else to provide for your children. You should look at yourself to provide for your own children.
And they have all your four brothers have children?
No, so one of them doesn't, and fair play to him, he works,
right,
and he does go out to work, but the others that do have children don't work at all.
Well, that's just going to possibly mean that the next generation will watch Dad sitting on a sofa and decide that that's what they'll do.
And that's exactly it. And for me, it's caused a rift in the family now, because people think I'm the golden person because I have the nice things because I go to work. But ultimately, I just work for it. That's it. There's no difference. I grew up in a council house. I now...
But how come, lastly, you got the work ethic from Mum and Dad, but your siblings didn't? I don't... why do you
suppose... And that's it. That's it. I think that they were shown how easy it was to claim universal credit, and they've now just realised that they can just do this long term. I think the housing prices, etc., are so hard to get on a property ladder now. There is no kind of work ethic to get up and want to go to work, to own your own house one day.
And what is it you do, Lewis?
So I work in the insurance sector.
Right.
Funnily enough, I now work in the same company as my father. But that wasn't a hand-in-hand situation. I went out and got my own experience, and luckily enough just ended up at the same place because we grew up in the same town.
Good luck with what you're doing. I can imagine your frustration with your brothers. Lewis, thank you for that. Coming up after the news, asking a female colleague if they're menopausal is not harassment. A tribunal has ruled. She claims that the person who went to tribunal claimed her male manager asked her, is someone going through the change? When she lost her train of thought, but that's not harassment. Plus, why does it always rain on me? Is it because I lied when I was 17? Well, since January the 1st, it has rained every single day, and in one part of the United Kingdom, in Scotland, northern Scotland, there's been no sunshine since January the 21st. When will it all come to an end? We'll try and find out after this. It's 9:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Nine people have been killed in a mass shooting in Western Canada. A gunman opened fire at a school and a nearby home in the town of Tumbler Ridge. The suspect is also dead. A government minister has told Nick security measures could be reviewed in schools following a stabbing in northwest London. A 13-year-old boy is being held on suspicion of attempted murder after two boys were injured yesterday. And a group that monitors anti-Semitism in the UK says it saw a spike in incidents in the aftermath of the Manchester synagogue attack. 40 cases were recorded on both the day and the day after last October's attack, the highest daily totals of the year. LBC weather largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain through today. The best of any sunny spells in the south. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC.
Yeah, I'm one of their biggest fans. I've got all the vinyl. First saw them at a tiny little place in Camden. Then as festival headliners a few years back. Oh, now that was special. So there's no chance I'd miss their world tour. In London, Lisbon and LA. Good thing I've been saving.
From down the road to across the globe, saving gets you there. Join the millions of people already saving with NS&I. Visit nsandi.com.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers, vampire facials, forest bathing? Really? The real secret to feeling young can be found in the new Seat Ibiza and new Arona. Both have smart new looks and stylish new interiors. Plus, new alloy wheels and a 6-speaker sound system. Seat, rolling young.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadapilla, Rowing Boats, Alder Slays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood, and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Waking up this morning, looked out the window, I thought, good, it's not raining. And then as I actually walked towards the car, no, there was that drizzle. And it set me thinking, it does appear to have rained just about every day this year. And in parts of the country, by the way, it literally, and that's literally an overused word, has. Now, there are still 100 weather flood warnings in place across the whole of the United Kingdom, 97 in England, 3 for Scotland. In much of the country, they recorded their wettest January ever on record. In parts of Scotland, they've not seen any sunshine since January the 21st. And you just get the sense it's never... I cannot remember the last day this year that it didn't rain. So when will it... What's causing it and when will it come to an end? Steph Galter is a meteorologist at Square Raindrop. And I read it's something to do with high pressure or low pressure from Scandinavia or something. Steph, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, what's happened is our jet stream's headed further south. We often hear about the jet stream. It's what guides our weather. It lets it go where the jet stream wants it to go. And right. We've got this high pressure that's set up over Scandinavia, and that's pushed that jet stream further south than usual. So all the rain that might have headed up, you know, between Scotland and Iceland, instead is going over us. And then it hits that high pressure, can't go any further. So we've ended up sort of being the end of the train track, if you will, and the weather systems come here and basically die over us. So we just see cloud and endless rain.
Can there be more rain up there?
There's always more rain up there. There's plenty more. But there is good news on the horizon. Saturday is looking sunny.
For the whole of the United Kingdom or just the soft south?
Just about for the whole of the UK. It does look like the rain... I mean, it's a brief interlude. I can't work miracles. But it should be bright, sunny, cold, you know, really cold. But it's a brief interlude, and by Sunday, the wet weather's back.
For how long?
Well, things are changing now, so it isn't as bleak as it looked like, you know, a week ago. If you'd have asked me a week ago, I'd be like, oh, there's no end in sight. But now things are beginning to shift. So we have had this terrible weather, but also Spain and Portugal have as well. For Spain, they've had their annual rainfall already this year. So it's been incredibly
In Spain and Portugal, they've had their rain for the year already.
Parts of Spain have had their entire annual rain already this year. Yes, it's been incredibly wet because that jet stream is headed further south, also affecting Spain and Portugal. But now things are all beginning to move a little bit more flex. So the fact that we do have a sunny day on Saturday is really good news because it means that things are changing. So what's going to happen? Thursday, Friday, some cold air is going to come down from the north and the low pressure, kind of visualize it to our west, is going to head across towards the east. That will pull down some very cold air from the north. And so first of all, in northern Scotland on Thursday, we'll see things start to brighten up, but turn colder. And then that will spread its way southward, filter all the way south by the time we get to Saturday. So Saturday will be a very frosty start, sharp frost, very cold, but it will be sunny. And I think we all just need that one day of sunshine.
We definitely need a day of sunshine. And then what happens after that, Steph?
After that, things do turn more unsettled again, but it's more kind of your regular wet weather. So things will be wet, but not quite as they have been. So there'll be some rain, but also some drier interludes as well. We just need a bit of a mix, really, don't we?
We certainly do. Steph, thank you. Steph Galter, meteorologist at Square Raindrop. So relief is on the way. It's going to get colder, but at least the damn rain will stop. And although we're moaning, of course, for other people, I'm acutely aware it's far more serious. Rivers have burst their banks. There's been flooding and flood warnings. And, of course, in some instances, people's homes have been flooded as well. So it's all right for us to moan. It's far worse for them. But perhaps it will be coming to an end. Bill says, my friends have been in Portugal since Christmas. They've only had 5 days without rain. We've just heard from meteorologists that parts of Spain and Portugal have had their entire annual rainfall already. Graham and Bushy makes a pertinent point. With all this rain, how long before we get our first hosepipe ban? I think some parts of the country are already still labouring under hosepipe bans. Steph Galter, again, thanks for your input on that. Let's talk worklessness, an epidemic of it, warns the boss of Tesco. He should know his company totally, globally, employs 330,000 people. Tristan in Southend. Tristan, it's your story.
Hello.
Hello,
Nick. Good morning. My story is I'm registered fully blind, as in completely blind, and also I have epilepsy, and I will easily have seizures a minimum 5 times a week.
Oh, now, do you know they're coming on? Can you tell the onset?
No, not at all. And it's random times, obviously. You don't schedule them around a work schedule, you know. No. But the thing is all these politicians and commentators keep saying disabled people need to work, but they need to factor in some people can never find realistic employment. You see, with the epilepsy, it's not like you have a seizure and then 10 minutes later you're back to normal. You're really not. It takes at least a couple of hours and you lose control of your bladder and bowel.
Oh, poor man.
This is the thing. Well, I just don't know what they expect me to do, Nick. I'd like to see some of your listeners phone up and tell me some jobs that I could realistically do, because I can't find them. But they tarnish everyone with the same brush. The job centre are guilty of one thing.
Right.
They'll say, you're disabled, you're going to work. They don't say, here's your disability, here's what we can find for you or work with you to obtain.
What sort of jobs have you looked to try and get?
Ironically, I have looked at Tesco. I didn't have any luck with them, unfortunately, but I did do a very good CV. I mean, previously I was a homeless support worker, and I did that 74 hours a week. The money was fantastic, and I enjoyed that way of living.
In every day, or did you work from home? What's the situation?
With the homeless support?
Yes,
I was actually in an office. Absolutely loved it. Going there, the workmates become like your family because you're there so many hours.
Yes, of course.
So you'll get on very well.
But how did you handle the issue that you might have had an epileptic? Do I call it fit or do we call it incident? Which is the appropriate word?
Fit, please.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the
word.
I
didn't want to cause offence. Okay.
No, sorry,
how did
no
you
offense.
Cope if you had an epileptic fit at the office?
How I coped was I had basically the best employers in the entire world, Nick, to be honest with you. There was like a restroom and I could go in there and get some rest. Now, if more employers had that sort of facility, it would be great for someone like me, but there isn't. And I even had a shower room for the staff.
Right.
Always surrounded by people, so it was absolutely brilliant.
Why did that job come to an end?
because I lost my eyesight, unfortunately.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So how long ago was that?
Lost my eyesight 2 days before Christmas, 2 years ago.
Suddenly like that, or was your eyesight failing?
No, I had an accident related to the epilepsy, unfortunately.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So everybody talks about getting folk back into work, but the reality, as you said earlier, Tristan, is you can't get any work.
Well, who's going to employ me? This is the problem. I'd love to work. Yeah. I don't say that as empty words. I say it because I mean it.
Mm.
But the challenge I'd have for your listeners is, what if they think in their own heads, what job can I do? It's just unrealistic expectations of jumping through hoops you cannot jump through.
Look after yourself, Tristan. That's the reality from your point of view. It's important that we hear stories such as that. Tristan, thank you. Now, let's come to the conversation I've had a couple of times. We'll have more calls on this by about worklessness, but this story involving Lucy Waller, who was a coordinator at the Swan Engineering Group, suing for sexual harassment. Her male manager, she said, asked her, is someone going through the change, when she lost her train of thought. She complained her line manager told her, you're just acting that way because you're going through the change. But at a tribunal, the judge dismissed her sex harassment claims because it was not reasonable for her to regard her manager's comments as violating her dignity. Said she was unduly sensitive at the time due to personal matters, whatever they might be. However, she did win a claim of constructive unfair dismissal related to her being forced into resigning because her boss, it was deemed, cold-shouldered her when he found out she had complained about him. How tough is it having the menopause at work? Elizabeth Carr Ellis, founder of Pausativity, Know Your Menopause, the campaign, and joins me now. Elizabeth, what's the campaign seeking to make folk aware of? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. We're seeking to make people aware of what menopause symptoms are and how bad they can be. A lot of women find they start menopause, and they all know it's irregular periods and hot flushes, but they don't realise things. It's like mood swings, hot brain fog, which I've just had there, fog, aches and pains, and all this. There's about 30-something symptoms that have been identified, and women don't understand it. So our campaign is trying to make women more aware of what's going on.
Women aware, or employers aware, or everyone aware, Elizabeth?
Everyone aware. Our aim is to get menopause awareness posters in GP offices and in health centres so that everybody is aware, because if you're working with somebody who is going through menopause, their hormones are fluctuating just the same way as a teenager's hormones fluctuate. We give a lot of credit to our teenagers. We give them a lot of leeway because we understand those hormones, because everybody goes through it. But only women go through menopause, so people don't understand how their hormones are affecting them.
A minute ago, you couldn't quite land on the word you sought, which, by the way, happens to me every single working day of my life. But anyway, and you said it was down to brain fog. If I had said to you, oh, Elizabeth, someone going through the change, how would you reacted?
One of the things that you find with the change is you don't put up with any nonsense anymore. And you would get a very sharp reply from me if you were to say that, Nick. No, we learn that. We don't put up with that. And I would explain exactly what was going on. I was very good when I worked with men. I told them every day if I was having a bad menopause day, so they would know not to talk to me like that.
And were you disappointed by this employment tribunal? Because it's not a form of employment harassment, it would appear, Elizabeth.
I am, yes, because that is a very patronising and a very old-fashioned thing to say to somebody who is going through menopause. You know, menopause is a recognised life change that affects women, and it can affect them in many ways. I've spoken to you in the past about how it left me feeling practically suicidal.
I remember that. Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, just to say, oh, is somebody going through the change, I think is a very patronising, and yes, it's a very sexist comment to make.
Lastly, and I know we've talked about this before, but for listeners who've not heard you, how debilitating can it be in its most extreme instances?
Oh, in its most extreme, it can take you down to very dark places. I used to work next to the River Thames, and I used to walk down every day and wonder how much it would hurt to throw myself in.
Good
because
God.
I couldn't feel as if life was worth it. It takes you into bad places. It can. That does not affect everybody, obviously, and life goes on, you know, you have it. That's why it's important for people to know your menopause so that they can recognise those symptoms and get the help they need as soon as possible.
do you think male bosses are less aware than female bosses, or is it right across the board there's not enough knowledge?
It varies, because, you know, one in four women will go through the menopause with very light symptoms. My friend didn't even realize she'd gone through the menopause until her periods had stopped for a long period of time. And so she is much more... She finds it more difficult to empathize with how I get sometimes, because to her it was a breeze. So sometimes women can be a little bit difficult with it as well if they've never gone through it as well. But it's not, I don't want to say it's men and women. It's just a lack of understanding about what menopause can be.
Grateful for your time, Elizabeth Carr Ellis, founder of Pausativity. Know Your Menopause campaign group. If you are going through it, how sensitive, how aware are your employers or employees? How well do they manage that? And how, again, to use that word, how debilitating can it be for you? We'll take calls from you ladies after that. But we're going back into the world of worklessness as well. Richard, you are a business owner, so you're very much on the front line. We want to hear your story after this. It's 9:46, LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
At least 9 people have been killed in one of Canada's deadliest mass shootings ever. Speaking to Nick, a schools minister has praised the response of the police following a double stabbing at a school in northwest London. And secondary schools in England will be expected to have a so-called inclusion base for pupils with special educational needs and disabilities. LBC weather largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain, the best of any sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays of over 10 miles on the M25 clockwise from Junction 8 at Reigate to 11 at Chertsey. And that was after those two separate accidents from earlier. Also on the M25, there are anti-clockwise queues from Junction 14 at Heathrow to 12 at the M3 because a skip lorry broke down. That's just been recovered, but it's still very slow. Albert Bridge remains closed both ways for those emergency works, and slow on the North Circular Road southbound from the M11 to the A12. And that was after a car broke down earlier. On the trains, Thames Link and East Midlands Railway services are severely disrupted at St Pancras. And also on the Underground, there are severe delays on the District Line and also minor delays on the Circle and Bakerloo lines.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
How much trouble is the royal family in over its abject failure to respond responsibly to the Epstein crisis? And PMQs should be a doozy.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
It's hard to concentrate when you're worried about your health. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
At AXA Health Insurance, we build our teams with people who care. So when you need us, we're here to support you. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. Pre-existing conditions are not covered.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a 4-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. Or wobbly, or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd buy a really nice suit.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
I'm rich!
But instead of a suit, you buy a jetpack. And ruin your sister's wedding.
So sorry, I'm going to the land!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's come back to the conversation about worklessness and bring Richard of Durham into the conversation. Richard, you're a business owner. Tell me a little bit about it. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. We're a property maintenance and cleaning company, and we employ 54 people now, right. Of which we're a leader in disability, so we help other companies do prepare for disabilities. 23% of our team have got some form of seen or unseen, right. And we employ veterans who sometimes have PTSD.
Right, well done.
So we do everything as socially we can as a company when we've been there for 11 years. My daughter and I, when we set the company up, that wanted that, but to do that. But where we're increasingly finding it A, frustrating, and B, difficult, is the attitude of the current government, in that if you actually own a business, you're automatically of the level of Lord Sugar's income. And I respect Lord Sugar immensely. I think he's an amazing guy. Mm. But the small businessman is still being, it's treated that way. And it's increasingly difficult to A, employ, and B, actually have a bottom line anymore. Our bottom line in November 24 was wiped out because a lot of our ladies are mums who drop the kids at school, go and clean, pick the kids up again, and they were in the 5,000 to 9,000 bracket. National Insurance didn't pay on them. Now we pay. Naturally, the contractor says, I'm sorry, Richard, you took the contract at that price.
Yeah.
And that's your problem. So our bottom line has been wiped out. And the government just don't understand. You know, we sign as purpose guaranteed for loans that we take out and put our houses on the line to try and build a business. And all we're doing is getting wiped either way.
Treated as if you're Alan Sugar with his level of income and his size of his business. Expand on that a little bit more, if you would.
Well, everybody seems to think every single businessman and every small business owner is wealthy. We're comfortable, don't get me wrong, and we have a good standard of living. But we're not wealthy, and a lot of our work is towards our pensions. So our pension pot might be in the business. Mm. And, you know, if we can't sell it or we can't further invest in it to make it, you know, increase, then we are in a different position.
This call is being recorded.
We bought a site.
That's all right.
Wow. Been a bit years ago. So we had our own site. We weren't renting.
Right.
It's taken us 3 years on an industrial site to get planning permission to build a warehouse.
If a government could do something to help, what would be the first measure you would seek to talk about?
So we would seek to talk about how you can help us invest. Because we cannot draw any money down to invest. I can't build a warehouse. Now I have planning permission because I can't get any money to be able to do it.
Right.
I mean, we need to have a grown-up conversation about, you know, where work is created. Companies that, like ours that try our best to give work to a numerous aspects. And I feel sorry for the gentleman who was on before who's blind and that because that is obviously very difficult for him. But there are companies out there like ours. We see them every day in the northeast of England. Yeah. They're all trying their best, but we're just being battered from pillar to post, and nobody's listening. We feel that nobody is listening.
Final question. What was the impact of the budget with the hike in NI for your business then, Richard? You touched on it briefly with what it means to some of it. I think you said the ladies who work for you.
If we felt that way, we might have actually just shut up shop and gone home and just walked away. We haven't, obviously. We've carried on. But we're not if we cannot now, at this moment in time, go after a contract to take on more people because we can't afford to employ them.
Good luck with the work you're doing, Richard, particularly the help you give to those who find it difficult or work around their schedule, of course, to take children to and from school. Richard, thank you. Now, another aspect of the workplace is, of course, women with the menopause and a rather unsympathetic view, perhaps, at an employment tribunal. Rachel's in Swaffham. What do you want to tell me about that, Rachel? You're on the radio. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Yes. I wanted to talk about my experience. So I went through menopause about 8 years early. So my period stopped at 45. Mm-hmm. I think it generally is about 53 for a lot of women. Mm-hmm. And it absolutely was just debilitating. I thought that anything to do with menopause had to have a five at the front in terms of your age.
Sure. Yeah.
So I didn't even know what was going on with me.
What was going on with you?
And it affected my career, my relationships, my mental health. Mm-hmm. I was just knocked completely sideways. And I got through it, but the whole thing from start to finish lasted about 9 years.
9 years?
Yeah, I was told at the beginning of perimenopause that it would take up to 10 years from start to finish, and I was horrified. I thought, no, surely not. And I was told, yes, up to 10 years.
Your love life or your romantic situation, what happened?
My personality changed. I got very moody. I lost any patience. I couldn't think straight. I had brain fog. I was just a different person completely.
What did it do for your career?
Well, I just started a job about midway through, a brand new job in a different industry. And I just couldn't function properly. I couldn't concentrate. I found it difficult. I had insomnia, so I was sleepy all the time. And in the end, I only stayed 4 years in that job because I think it just damaged it from the get-go.
If you'd been in a meeting and you'd struggled to find the right words, or you'd been a little bit sort of disjointed and your manager had said, oh, are you going through the change? How would you have reacted?
I would not have been happy. I would have been upset at that. I mean, I think I did a fairly good job of hiding it. I knew to myself that I wasn't performing. Whether they picked up on that, I don't know.
So you're through it now, Rachel?
Yes, finally, after 9 years.
9 years, okay. So you're 54 now, are you, mate?
No, I started at 41, and 41. I'm now 50.
I'm so sorry. So what would 50-year-old Rachel tell 40-and-a-half-year-old Rachel as she entered that part of her life? What do you wish you knew then that you know now?
Well, back 9 years ago, there wasn't as much about the menopause as there is now. Mm. So I think it's a little easier. But I would say, hang in there, be patient, be kind to yourself, take the rest, take the time out. If you can, cut back on hours, go part-time, do that if you can. Mm-hmm. If it's possible, but just be kind to yourself. Look at other options. I did it naturally, without any intervention, and I got through it. So I would just say, be kind, and all the partners out there, understand your partners as well.
Lastly, did your employers, were they kind?
They didn't know what was going on. I didn't talk to them about it. I found it a very difficult time there, very, very difficult 4 years, and I was glad to go.
I reckon your conversation will have helped a lot of women who are in a similar age now, as now you're in your 50s, it begins with a 5, so you've probably achieved quite a lot. Rachel, we'll have to end there. Good luck. Thank you for your candour. That's it for today. Now, if you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions, and download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it. I'm done. James O'Brien, the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, do stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. I don't often say this, but I think that PMQs today, live from 12, may qualify as unmissable. For a number of reasons, not just the extremely hot water that Keir Starmer has found himself in of late, but also the fact that Kemi Badenoch, his opposite number, has an extraordinary ability to miss open goals. So if you were to combine those two circumstances, you could probably sell tickets. Luckily, I don't have to, because it's free, and it's with you live from 12. Before that, the Royal Family and Jeffrey Epstein, Andrew Windsor, or whatever he's calling himself this week, and the unavoidable and quite possibly irremovable stench of scandal. Don't ask you this very often, but how big a problem does this represent?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney has cancelled a trip to Germany after a mass shooting in British Columbia. At least 9 people were killed at a school and a nearby home in the small town of Tumbler Ridge. Srishti Gangdev, a journalist in Vancouver, has given LBC this update.
We know that police have recovered the suspect's remains at the scene, and they said that the suspect's description matched up to the person that they found. They're not telling us the person's age. They're not telling us their gender. They're not telling us what kind of connection this person may have had to the high school in question or to the home where another 2 victims were found dead in the community.
A government minister has told LBC security measures could be reviewed in schools following a stabbing in northwest London. 2 boys aged 12 and 13 were seriously injured at Kingsbury High School in Brent yesterday. Counter-terror officers are leading the investigation, but the Met Police say it's not being treated as terrorism. Speaking to LBC this morning, the school's minister, Georgia Gould, praised the response of emergency services.
The school is not far from my constituency, and it's sent absolute shockwaves through our whole community. You've got 2 children who are in hospital. I think all of our thoughts will be with them and their families. The police have acted swiftly. Somebody is in custody, and we are backing the police in their investigation and taking this very seriously.
A 13-year-old boy remains in police custody on suspicion of attempted murder. A group that monitors anti-Semitism in the UK says it saw a spike in incidents in the aftermath of the Manchester synagogue attack. 40 cases were recorded on both the day and the day after last October's attack, the highest daily totals of the year. Sir Keir Starmer is preparing for Prime Minister's questions later after fighting back against pressure to quit. He's promised he won't walk away from his mandate and has hit out at infighting within the Labour Party. And secondary schools in England will be expected to have a so-called inclusion base for pupils with special educational needs and disabilities. The government is setting out a decade-long plan to renew buildings ahead of a planned reform to the sector. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 40 at 10,394. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.14. LBC weather largely cloudy with outbreaks of rain through today. The best of any sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone. With Vodafone together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning indeed to you. There's quite a bit around today, you know. There's no immediately obvious, as there has been in recent days, story that absolutely demands all of our attention. But PMQs coming up at 12 could be very, very interesting. It's an extraordinary moment, or not a moment, an extraordinary reflection of that old adage about a week being a long time in politics, isn't it? That Cammy Badenoch, not long ago, was the one whose leadership looked like not surviving, possibly even until the local elections in May, whereas now Keir Starmer's position is, or has been in recent days, considerably shakier. And of course, some people, mostly weirdos, very keen to claim that Badenoch is embarked upon some sort of renaissance. Their polling numbers for a government that is in the doldrums, the idea that His Majesty's opposition would be polling as low as it is in any other circumstances would be catastrophic. But we are not living in normal circumstances, and we haven't been for a decade because of what happened a decade ago. And it is to that that Rachel Reeves will finally turn later today with a speech that is going to point out the bleeding obvious. I don't know whether we're going to file that under better late than never, or whether we're going to roll our eyes in despair at the fact that it's taken 10 years for a senior member of any government to admit that not being in one of the major economic blocks currently dominating commerce on this planet is an act of supreme idiocy. Look forward to that speech later today. It tallies, seeing as the B word is back in the
news. It tallies with a speech from a former head of the armed forces, or an intervention at least, explaining the necessity of a European army. While the Epstein files, to knit three outwardly disparate elements together into one unified theme, the Epstein files make it pretty clear that an awful lot of the movement and possibly even the money behind Brexit came from deeply unpleasant and morally corrupt oligarchs who just like to break things because rules limit the amount of money they can make, up to and including Steve Bannon explaining to the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein why Brexit would be brilliant and why he wanted to fill the European Parliament with fascists because they could be most relied upon not to put any obstacles in the way of them making untold sums of money. Funny that, isn't it? Funny. But not, I'm afraid, funny ha-ha. And it is to Epstein that we turn first this morning. I told you something yesterday, and I haven't, I'm afraid, made much progress with the thing that I was struggling with. And it is a question of how we properly report, reflect, recognize the plight of Jeffrey Epstein and his friends, victims. Still only one man has been jailed for the industrial scale abuse of young women. And it is those young women whose voices seem to me to be almost quietest. And I want today to turn our attention to the King and the royal family and their failure to properly... They kind of did with Andrew what the Labour government has stood accused of doing with Mandelson. And haven't they? Would you say that was fair? And the King is on the hook effectively for doing what Starmer did and for not moving quickly enough, for not acting robustly enough, for not really doing anything meaningful until their feet had been brought so close to the fire by revelations in the files. They're different times. I don't think the chronology is identical, but I suspect that the sin might be very similar. And, you know, we are still a very deferential nation. Most of us have mostly warm feelings for the King, even if we find the institution of monarchy at various degrees of anachronistic or absurd. But not doing this speaks to the thing I was trying to talk to you about yesterday. I didn't fail to find a way into the conversation, but I'm still not quite sure that we're ready for the phone-in. Because the phone-in is, we don't care enough, do we? We don't care enough about these women who appeared on an advert released during the Super Bowl, the biggest television audience, I think, on the planet, every year, but it's suddenly up there, and the ad spots in the Super Bowl have become almost a cultural phenomenon of their very own. And this advert was released during, it wasn't in the advertising break. It was released while the Super Bowl was on. So, you know, the attempt to kind of piggyback, if you like, the biggest television audience in the world. It certainly merits your time.
After years of being kept apart, we're standing together.
Standing together.
Because this girl deserves the truth.
Because she deserves the truth.
Because we all deserve the truth.
And you don't know, do you, quite why their struggle for the truth has been so long and so hard, except quite possibly under the heading of people don't care enough. And if you sense a certain reluctance in my voice, it's not the flipping King's fault that these women's stories have not been properly investigated or heard yet. But I think that he is part of the answer to the question of why. And people don't care enough. People just don't care enough. There's a hideous story today about an Afghan asylum seeker being convicted of raping a 12-year-old girl. And you can tell whether someone's racist or